Hey, this is Chuck Dixon, and you're listening to Signal of Doom.
Well, you know, for me, the action is the juice. I'm in.
Hello and welcome to Signal of Doom. I'm Dave. I'm here with the main man, Stu. Stu, how are you?
I'm pretty good, Dave. How have you been this week?
I'm pretty good, man. It's episode 75, by the way.
That's a monstrous number.
And I've made
a comment. I didn't expect it to get this far.
It's a score that I'd take in Test cricket. A 75.
Like, mate, you would have taken a 7.5. This is... Let's not overplay this hand, Dave.
One day, Bill, I'm saying, would you take a 75?
I'd take a seven.
Oh, no. I want to hang around in the team.
Mate, with me, in my current...
I didn't ask you, what was
cricket
your
ability.
What was your top score? You asked me last episode. I said 17 not out. What was your top score?
I don't think it was even 17. I was a bowler.
Fair enough.
Oh, I think I got like a 5 or a 6 once.
I can imagine coming in off a long run, Stu. Was it a long run thundering in?
Oh, it was terrible. My bowling stats were pretty good, but the batting was just awful.
All right. Well, look, episode 75, we're doing The Vision by Tom King this week.
Yes, we are.
Stu's pick again.
Yeah.
Putting yourself under a lot of pressure, Stu, aren't you, these days?
Yeah, it's a situation that I'm just realising now. every week where I hit it out of the park every week, so...
You're gonna come up short at some point.
I know, at some point I'm just going
to
fail miserably.
You're going to run this again.
I feel like this week came close, but I think I pulled it off.
I think I pulled it off. And guess what I've been reading, Stu? The Air War in Vietnam. Oral histories from the servicemen who flew over there. During the NAM. It's been absolutely great, actually.
That sounds pretty intense.
It was very intense. So it's like guys from the very beginning of Vietnam, and I'm sort of halfway through the book. It's really cool. I meant to have some quotes I was going to read you out. There's one guy with the Republic floundering now, you know, for those who asked for so little and gave so much. And I was just like, almost the anthem was blaring. I was almost saluting during reading at times. It was getting pretty intense. But a really good collection. And what's cool about it is it's stacks of different accounts. So everyone kind of has, some people are very succinct and others kind of tell the story. And you kind of get snapshots in generally 2 pages of what these guys were doing in the war. It's fucking intense. I love it. You know me, once I get lost in the jungles, man. Jesus.
I'm amazed you've got so much time on your hands sometimes.
Oh, this is all... You know what? I'll tell you when I read this, Stu. It's about 20 minutes before I fall asleep. It's in bed. Michelle's fallen asleep. I've got the iPad cranked to my eye. And I'm just reading it until I just, like, just pass out. Yeah. My last sort of thoughts of the air war in Vietnam, but then I'm just gone.
Yeah, that's got to be healthy.
Yeah,
that's
good, yeah. More than once, the iPad's come and hit the nose...
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Okay. There's been some struggling. Pretty, you know... A few times I'm like, I don't remember any of this.
I mean, you are a partier, Dave. I think that sums it up, doesn't it?
Is it 10:15?
Yeah.
P.M.?
Yeah, when you come in with a boo-boo on your nose because your iPad fell on it.
Oh, yeah, man. For sure. Now, Stu, we're going to kick off with the first piece of news. Chris Pine and Chris Hemsworth, the two Chrises.
Both the Chrises.
Yeah, threatened to walk from Star Trek IV. Apparently, the producers want to downscale the budget after the underperformance of Star Trek Beyond, which I've never seen, actually. And they had deals in place, which the studio is now looking to cut down, and they're both written a book. Hemsworth famously played Kirk's father for like 5 minutes in the first Star Trek movie, and Pine plays Kirk. Where are you, Stu?
I mean, to be honest, this Star Trek franchise isn't monstrous. Mm. They could very easily reboot it, start it. Star Trek doesn't have to be 4.
Sure.
Pull it from a different time period. Don't go with Kirk. Go with Picard. Go with someone else.
Well, there's also talk of Tarantino's as well, which apparently was going to have the cast of Star Trek 4 in it. Like, that was a news item 2 weeks ago.
Well, look, if the Tarantino thing is confirmed and finished, I'm reasonably sure these two guys would stick around.
I'm sure that's you, Tarantino.
Exactly. You've got to be an idiot to walk away from a movie when Tarantino's about to come onto a board.
Yeah, yeah.
The fact that they're walking kind of says that it's not. happening.
Yeah, I'll believe Tarantino's film with it when it hits cinemas, kind of thing. I think,
but but I don't think many people are really holding out desperately for Star Trek 4.
No,
have you and that Beyond? It has to have both.
Have you seen Star Trek Beyond? Because apparently it's quite good, but it made no money. I've just not seen it.
I think I did.
Any good?
Forgot about it immediately. Yeah. It was fine
because I thought the original of the reboots was quite good. I thought Into Darkness was incredibly dull, and I just didn't get around to seeing Beyond. You know.
Yeah, I have seen all of the recent three, but...
Forgettable?
To me, all of them are okay.
Yeah.
They're not... Yeah. None of them blew me away. None of them are...
Hemsworth, too. I mean, look, they could definitely go without Hemsworth, but it's going to be tough to go without Kirk if you're going to do the rest of the crew. If you're going to stick with this...
You're sticking with that generation and you're sticking with that the rest of the cast...
Yeah. Oh, Kirk then, was fired.
Yeah, that's pretty hard.
Kirk was fired. Okay.
I mean, do you just run it with Spock leading the crew and...
And I just feel like the already mild interest just evaporates.
Yeah, I mean, Zach Quinto's okay.
I actually think he sucks, a Spock. But I'm not a fan.
Yeah, I think they're going to struggle.
Yeah, it's...
And Simon Pegg's not big enough to, you know, hold that franchise up.
God, no, playing Scotty. I'm not crossing the street to see it, put it that way.
I wouldn't even bother with the movie as a whole unless they were able to make some pretty serious changes.
I'd watch it on streaming if these guys were doing it. Like, but even then, it's a late Saturday night, like second movie in the chain kind of thing.
Oh yeah, this is definitely a stream it at home.
Yeah.
You can.
We're not exactly building a lot of hype here for it, are we? There's not much hype currently on the Signal 2 for Star Trek 4, with or without the Chrises. Let's face it, Hemsworth has got Men in Black coming, he's got more Avengers coming, so he's got plenty of other projects that are percolating very nicely for him.
Oh, his career's booming. Chris Pine's a little on the back burner at the moment.
This is Chris Pine's franchise where he's got a lot of
those. I mean, we know he's in Wonder Woman, the new Wonder Woman again.
But you wonder how much.
But, I mean, he's a secondary character in that. He's not Wonder Woman.
Whereas, see, if he's Kirk and they make three more of these movies, this is a fucking earner for him. He's got a lot more to lose in these negotiations, I think. It depends how much the discount is, too. So if I've signed up and they're going to pay me, say, $12 million, okay, then they come back and say, we can only pay you $8 million. You know, it's tough if you've already signed for 12.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's what's happened. These guys have signed deals and the studios come back and going, oh, look, we're cutting down budgets everywhere. Everyone's taking it here, guys.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are they? How much is the production taking? You're squeezing me for $5 million. You know, what's catering fucking doing?
Yeah.
You know, I can bring my lunch.
There you go, guys. An offer from Davey here. He'll take over either of these roles.
Yeah,
with a packed lunch. So
I'm available. Yeah. I'll undercut. I'll go 10% less for sure.
Yeah, you'll just take over from Chris Hemsworth.
Sure,
no problems.
Ladies may be disappointed. The public may be disappointed.
I didn't want to be the one to say that, but I think a lot of people will be disappointed.
I mean,
he's got big shoes to fill.
Sure. I mean, I'm, you know, fashionably attractive for a 44-year-old, kind of aging out a little bit, you know, but I mean, Hemsworth's what? Mid-20s in his prime, coming off, you know, a lot of hits. I'm coming in without the same amount of hits, but I'm willing to take a pay cut.
A slight pay cut.
I'll take seven mil.
It's generous, yeah.
Thank you. Anyway, I mean, look, Star Trek 4, I think, unless they cut a deal, surely they'll cut a deal. If Paramount are serious, like, realistically, I think they'll cut a deal with Chris Pine at least. They might let Hemsworth go and just change the script. Because Kirk's father, I mean, it's not like he's in it ever.
Well, I don't know how connected this is to canon.
It's in its own JJ universe.
See, so as far as I can tell, you could just run, like, you fire Kirk and you hire Picard.
You could.
The rest of the crew stays the same.
Just recast Picard.
Yeah, as long as you don't care about the timelines and the whole...
You could do that.
You know, it's a solution. They could run with that. I think fans would be kind of upset, but...
Fans would be upset, but...
If they're going to make money out of it and they can kind of somewhat justify it, they're going to go with it.
That's actually a decent idea, Stu. That's actually... With the shooter throwing around desperate ideas, that's actually not a bad desperate
idea. If they're going to get rid of Kirk, I don't think recasting him is the good option.
No. God, no.
Not four movies in.
I always thought they did quite well in casting.
Yeah.
I thought that was a reason.
So, for me, I'd offer him a...
Maybe this Shatner comes back.
What's so wrong with that?
I would too. Chad would be available. You could get him for $7 million.
Oh, yeah, you could.
He does anything.
You know, you offer Chris Pine a decent death scene.
Sure.
Like, you'd pay him a substantial cut, but you'd say, you're coming in, do a month of shooting, we'll kill you off in a massive battle.
Yeah.
You die a hero, and we replace you.
Yeah.
You get to walk away, we get to hold our head, you know.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
Kind of a win-win, but also a lose-lose.
Yeah, I feel that, like, the future of Star Trek is going to be on TV again. We've got Star Trek Discovery, we've got the Picard thing coming. You know, I think that the future of Star Trek is going to be a TV vehicle again, not a film franchise, in the next 10 years at least, anyway.
I imagine it's going to be through one of the streaming services.
Yeah, well, CBS All Access, that's the streaming service that does Discovery, and we'll do the Picard. And worldwide, they have a deal with Netflix, but in the US, it's CBS All Access.
I imagine it's going to be a Netflix more than a...
Yeah. Well, internationally, it's on. You can get all of Star Trek on Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I imagine it does very well for them, too. Like, think of all the Star Trek TV shows that are Next Gen, Original, Deep Space Nine, Voyager. There's a few, you know? So anyway, that's where I think the interest will be. Now, Stu, Birds of Prey wants to cast a biracial actress to play Black Canary. The news came out. I'm down with that, man. Like, I mean... Is this even news?
No, not
like,
really.
Really? Like, I mean...
I was going to ask you that. I didn't think this was...
No, it came out, man. Sometimes, you know, when Lois is collating the news, shit comes out.
It's like, sure, let's... Black Canary is not one of those characters that people are so hung up on that you can't possibly change it.
I like her power. I'd like to see her power done well in the movie, like the Sonic Scream or whatever she does, you know?
Yeah, I've always found that it's a tough power to put on film.
Yeah, I mean, do they do it in Arrow? She's in Arrow, isn't she?
Yeah, and they kind of do the wavy,
sure,
air kind of CGI effect.
How does she not shatter people's eardrums that are just around her? That's what I've always wondered.
I think she can, or maybe
But, like, how is Oliver Queen not deaf?
I also think she's able to direct it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a beam of sound, which makes no sense, but...
Yeah, I mean, I get the power from the comics, but, like, it's all... You're right, it's kind of tough to do in live action and make it...
It
has to be the way, doesn't it? Like, slow-mo must be involved all the time as well, I bet.
Yeah, probably.
You know, can you imagine, like, in reality, if you're in a marriage tour and you're in a fight? Like, as if she's going to use that weapon, she's not going to pull out that gun pretty
well. Well, it's similar to, like, in the recent X-Men movies, the one they did Banshee. Because he's got that sonic scream.
It's sucking.
And it wasn't good.
No, it was shit.
But that's why they picked the X-Men that they did.
Yeah, Banshee's in, like, first class.
Yeah.
Gee, he struggled, didn't he?
The X-Men that they picked originally were all very visually appealing X-Men.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, they all had pretty obvious physical traits.
Oh, they did well with the X-Men.
Yeah.
The X-Men movies, yeah, for sure. Wolverine, Storm, Mystique.
But, like, they weren't picking a lot of mutants that... had these kind of powers.
Sort of bullshit powers that are more for the comic page.
Yeah. Because they work well in a visual medium like a comic.
Yeah. No, I agree. Now, we've got another... Now, Stu, I've reversed my opinion from last week. Last week, the Ruby Rose news broke. And I forgot that actually... I was a follower on Ruby Rose Twitter for quite some time and actually had a few chats with her. I sort of forgot my roots a little bit there for a second. Now, Ruby Rose... This is kind of weird. She deleted a Twitter account after being told by members of the queer community she's not gay enough and due to being gender fluid and apparently, Stu, not Jewish enough either to play Batwoman. This is Welcome to 2018 where we are now ridiculous, Stu. I mean, her whole... She made a good point. She sort of said, my whole career, everyone slammed me because, like, you know, she's so massively gay, and now suddenly she's not gay enough. It's like, and she sort of said, like, this is ridiculous. This is why the community lets itself down. You know, people attacking Ruby Rose for not being gay enough to play Batwoman. It's like, how much more gay could she possibly be?
Hang on, but I didn't think that was...
There were members of the sort of queer community saying because she's gender fluid, that's how she designates herself.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't understand their argument. It doesn't make any sense to me, but...
It's silly. But there was also a Jewish thing.
But I thought last week, when this was Ruby Rose hatred, it was just because she's not a good actress.
Well, that's the angle I was coming from, that she's very
good. Same. She's not a good actress.
This wasn't why she... this wasn't her thing. And then she said...
And people were sending her hate because she was too gay last week or not gay enough last week? What was happening last week?
Unfortunately, what transpired was... Yeah, there were a lot of people saying she's very wooden. But what actually apparently hit her right in the feels, Stu, was that apparently people were going after her from her own community saying because she's gender fluid, she's not the right designation to play Batwoman, basically.
Go fuck off.
What I did write, this from Ruby Rose, this was her final tweet or something. I always like someone that has the final word. As a fan of the final word myself on a tweet, like when you're trying to go for that last knockdown punch, you know, in the argument. And she tweeted out, "I'm looking forward to getting more than 4 hours of sleep and to break from Twitter to focus all my energy on my next two projects." I know what the two are. You know what one of them is. "If you need me, I'll be on the bat phone. I'll be on my bat phone." Now, I have to admit, I'm now warming to Ruby Rose for this comment, and I also want a bat phone, Stu. Can I have one?
I'm pretty sure you've got a bat phone somewhere in this room.
I've got two phones. All my phones, actually, the screens are Batman.
Yeah, there you go.
You can change it to make it, you know, ringtone, like Batman signal and stuff. That's pretty cool.
You've been able to do that since the 90s, Dave.
I know, well done. But I've never worked out how to do it. But, I mean, I wish I could.
Ruby Rose has always been a fine celebrity.
Yeah, I mean, I quite
she's like just not a good actress.
Yeah, I know. But, like, dude, I was starting to think about it. Like, how many of them are good? Like, there's a lot of shit. Like, I've mentioned it again. The guy who plays Adam in Legends of Tomorrow, he's one of the worst actors I've ever seen.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, we're talking... I
forget what his name is.
He small plays screen... Brandon Ralph?
Yes. He's fucking woeful.
Yeah.
You know, but there are some...
But that's why he did one movie and then never again.
Yeah, because he's terrible.
Ruby Rose continues to get movies.
Oh, I know. She's favourite of the month, man.
She's done a bunch of movies over the last few years.
I think she's favourite of the month. She's hot. You know, she plays well. She's got the gay vote kind of thing. And, you know, it's a mixture of all that kind of stuff. And she's kind of hip and she's Aussie. They like that.
I don't know.
Can she act? I don't think she can act her way out of a paper bag, frankly. And I like Ruby Rose. But, I mean, she's no more an actor than you or me, really.
Put it this way, if I were working in anything DC related right now,
sure.
I wouldn't be going near people that can't act. Because you don't need that to add to whatever shit they're kind of working through already.
But you can
like see they're already on the back foot trying to make a decent movie to get their reputation off the ground.
Yeah.
And they're hiring people that are popular for not being able to act.
Well, Stu, you know what I'm afraid we're gonna hear is Batwoman. That Aussie accent comes through pretty loud and clear with Ruby Rose, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, she puts on the American accent, but it doesn't
but it's
wait.
Not good.
You don't have to wait till before that Aussie comes through real broad.
Yeah.
And that will be kind of funny. It's about.
I mean, I don't know. This is.
People who are going after not being Jewish need to get a life.
Like, I don't care if she Jewish. Could be a straight
I
mean, white
did
woman.
Was Jewish? I didn't know that.
I don't care. Not like, she care, could be a straight white Christian woman. I don't care.
Mm.
It, as long as she can act in the role, I'm fine.
Well, she's not a straight woman, Stuart.
None of it matters.
Christian.
Literally none of it matters. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I get your point. You know, I agree.
That is my point.
It's kind of crazy, isn't it?
She could have all of it. She could have none of it. She's acting, people.
It comes down, and also, I agree completely with you, but it also comes down to what she can actually fucking do. Like,
yeah, which is an act. I'm sorry, but...
Yeah, no, I get it.
If you're hiring someone that's already that person, they're not acting. Mm. You're just hiring that person.
Well, it's called stunt casting, isn't it? And that's what this is. I don't know, man. My hopes aren't high for this Batwoman thing. I think it's going to be tough on Ruby Rose to carry a whole show by herself, too. I could see a guest spot on Arrow, fine. Like, but the whole show of just Ruby Rose, like, on her shoulders, that's a lot of filming. It's a lot of Ruby Rose. You know, I just hope this is... Did you ever see Birds of Prey in the early 2000s? It was fucking terrible. They made a Birds of Prey TV show, Stu, that went for about 6 episodes. It was really bad. I hope this isn't a return to that kind of formula.
It feels like it's heading that way.
Yeah, I think so too. This feels like the Arrowverse jumping the shark in a big way, you know?
I mean, Arrow's on the decline massively.
I'm not watching it at all.
No, a lot of people have just switched off.
Yeah. It's like I'm so... I was bored already kind of thing. Like, I was invested for a while, but then I was just like some news patrol.
It's the same as something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
It's not that the shows are terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But they're only mediocre at best.
They're aggressively
mediocre. And they've never done anything to kind of disprove that.
Flash gets me a little more. I think it's a bit more fun. Something about
Flash.
Yeah,
it's a little better.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's great. Like, The Wire can fucking rest easy. But there's entertaining stuff in Flash, I thought.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll see. Jon Favreau's new show coming out, the Star Wars show, is costed at $100 million, Stu. 10 episodes at about $10 million a piece each. I mean, the mouse has got the money. For the Disney streaming service?
I mean, that's not massive.
No,
it's really that's significantly less than Game of Thrones.
Sure.
So, you're expecting something Game of Thrones quality-ish?
Yeah.
And they're talking about obviously, Star Wars has pretty heavy CGI.
Yeah.
Same as Game of Thrones. So, I mean, this is pretty much in the ballpark, which is what we were expecting.
Yeah. I mean, you want them to spend some money on it, don't you?
I think people are kind of shocked that it's that big, but...
I'm not.
When you're looking at a lot of these big budget TV shows with heavy CGI and things like that, it's a lot of money.
Yeah, and I mean, let's face it, they want to make a splash. They want people to sign up for the streaming service. They don't want it to be, like, fucking really shit, like, cheap. You know, like Sci-Fi Network, whatever the fuck that shit is. Like,
no, exactly. They want their first few projects to be monstrously big successes to drive people onto the platform.
Exactly.
Because they know that with these platforms, once you've got someone...
Once you're hooked.
It actually takes quite a bit for them to unsubscribe and delete their account.
It's like crack cocaine that way, isn't it?
So many people just get complacent and don't bother removing themselves.
Yeah,
it's like how many people have got gym memberships they never use or...
Oh, yeah.
Are paying monthly fees to, you know, bank accounts they don't use. And
true.
It's just...
You're almost like a financial manager over there, right?
It takes about an hour to get rid of this.
People want to hire you out to, you know, manage their finances.
If they can afford me,
if they can afford you, quotes available at the end of the show. Can I take a percentage if I refer them on? Can I get a 5%?
We'll see.
Dave Mon's always in the money.
We'll start it in the process, shall we? There we go.
There's rumours, by the way, that it's Mandalorians that he's focusing on, this Jon Favreau show.
Awesome.
Fucking hell yeah. Dude, I don't know enough about Mandalorians other than I fucking
like when we read the Star Wars trade before, I was saying that I actually really want to read about the Mandalorian war.
Yeah, me too.
Like the Mandalorian Sith kind of battles and stuff.
Who are they fighting? Are they fighting the Sith?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, because I never know who they're fighting. I'm like, they're fucking cool, but I don't know who they're fighting. They're just like randomly fighting people. Like, yeah, I want to find out about it too. But didn't we read something about how there was a news item we had, which I always remember, that apparently this is set like 6 years after the Battle of Endor. So it's set like, that was, I don't know if that's been confirmed by Favreau or by Disney, but there was a report that this was set like a few years after Return of the Jedi, basically.
Yeah, I mean, you can set the main series in a time and then flash back to events or something like that. That's
I want to see this.
Pretty reasonable.
Now, Stu, you've got once again, Stu, you've been hot on the Disney beat, and you've got some news about Alan Horn.
What happened? So for those that don't know Alan Horn, his name hasn't come up that often on the show.
It hasn't come up that much, but I do know who he is. He's a head honcho at Disney, isn't he?
Yeah. So above Kevin Feige is Alan Horn, who runs all of the kind of cinema side of Disney.
I thought you were going to say the world.
So, close to it now. So, Feige's in charge of, obviously, Marvel.
Sure.
You've got, like, Kennedy in charge of Star Wars. You've got another person in charge of animation and then Pixar. Mm. He's their boss.
God.
He reports directly to Bob Iger.
Bob Iger.
So,
top.
Alan Horn's basically the 2IC for Disney.
Wow.
Gee,
he'd be on a fair wage, wouldn't he?
Oh, he'd be on a massive wage. And he's rubbing his hands here because...
I've been with jealousy.
There's a bunch of rumours going around that Bob Iger's potentially looking at going into politics in the near future.
I think he's already said that he's going to be exiting Disney within the next, like, you know,
years. Yeah, this was like his big... I don't know.
He's going to go to politics.
Apparently, they're looking at him as a presidential candidate.
So he's got my vote.
And you've got to imagine that
he's got my vote already.
Horn's looking to step up and fill those shoes.
Sure. Yeah. Wow. Anyway. This is big wig stuff, Stu, you've got here.
So anyway, Horn on Tuesday met with James Gunn. Had a meeting.
The James Gunn story continues on, does it?
Well, not for much longer.
Not for much longer. It's not looking good for James.
No, it's not. So the meeting was to discuss potentially rehiring him. All those rumours saying that they were going to rehire him.
The fucking petition finally came through, did it?
Basically, the rumours were true. Like, they were looking at it.
Talking about it, yeah.
Basically, the meeting, he said, we're sticking by our original position. Which is what you and I said from
Was it a polite lunch? Do you think it was a lunch or was it a coffee? What was it?
I
it was like a coffee, actually.
I feel like it could just be a coffee. Yeah.
We're doing this out of courtesy, James, because we had a good relationship in the past.
This was pretty much a courtesy lunch.
Yeah.
This was a thanks for your time, but we're not changing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't look like they're going to be using him in any ongoing capacity as like a producer.
Which means they've got to pay him out as well, because he looks...
They're still using his script.
Sure.
Or at least a vast bulk of his script.
So he gets a payment then. Would you think
so he does get a payment, but I think it's a one-off kind of deal.
Okay. What about all the films he had a producing role in that were still, like, to all that cosmic shit that he was involved with that they were talking about potentially rolling through? Like, he was developing other stuff other than just Guardians, wasn't he?
Yeah, so they don't have a solution as yet. Not nothing that's public.
Could it be money?
Well,
could it be a fucking payout?
The problem is the job that they were like kind of working him into was what the Russo brothers have been doing.
Yeah, big role. Yeah.
It's you handle maybe three or four films of the next couple of phases.
He really fucked himself on this, didn't he?
Like, three or four films are yours completely.
Yeah.
But then you oversee the other films in a timeline-y, connection-y, you know, make sure the continuity
is there. Warlocks and all that kind of shit. That, you know, that kind of stuff.
Kind of like, where do you want to introduce characters? Why? Where do you want these characters to end up by the time you get to this movie?
Right.
So, kind of like a hands-on version of what Feige does.
Okay. Okay, like an overseeing kind of role.
Basically, yeah. And that's what the Russos have been doing. Yeah. So even though we've had, like, Ant-Man and the Wasp was done by Peyton Reed...
Sure.
The Russos were there kind of giving Peyton tips, saying this is where we need the characters to end up.
It's consultancy.
This is what happened in the other movies that you're not aware of, that these characters will have been through. So you need to understand that when you're doing your film.
Mm. Yeah, okay. But the relationship's been severed, which makes sense. He can't continue to be doing that kind of shit if he can't be trusted with his own movie. So,
well, no, exactly right. Yeah. They're not going to use him in any capacity going forward. So
it feels like it's just a payout, Stu. It feels like his X amount of million, go away. We're done.
Yeah, essentially.
Basically, that's it.
And I think it's also a let's not get into any kind of smear campaigns or anything like that. Like, let's leave on good terms.
He has played it well in terms of his public pronouncements have been nothing other than just, you know, I respect the decision, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he immediately apologised and said, I respect the decision, and he's never said a bad word about Disney.
Because he knows his next step could be, well, with another major studio.
Like, exactly, you know, right. And let's be honest, I think pretty much everybody understands Disney's point of view.
Oh, yeah.
And why they did what they did.
Definitely, yeah. Oh, I do. Yeah,
it's completely... So, there are a lot of people that think
it's an unfortunate situation.
There are a lot of people that think it's harsh, but...
Sure.
You can still go, I get why Disney did what they did.
No, I can understand.
And I think that's where James Gunn is.
Put it this way, if I was Bob Iger's 2IC and he made this call, I would have totally stood by the call.
Yeah.
If it asked for my opinion, I would have maybe said, look, you know, there's two ways to go here, Bob, you know... Which way do you want to... Which I'm sure he probably did. They probably had that discussion. We can go one or two ways.
Yeah, and Feige did go into Bat for Gunn.
Sure.
And originally said, you know, I'd like him to be on the project. We've got his role set out.
Sure.
He's a big part of this franchise moving forward.
Yeah.
But once Alan Horn and Bob Iger basically said, we're not changing our mind...
Do you have an interesting thing I saw online, though? That, like, and this is kind of to wrap this with a bow, because I have no dog in the fight whatsoever. I sort of, as we've said... There have been plenty of actors, for example, who've had checkered past who work for Disney. Like, for example, Brolin, spousal abuse, charged, you know.
Downey Jr. went to jail
for drug abuse. Like, and I like both these guys. I'm just saying there's plenty of people who've had checkered pasts who work for Disney. I'm just, you know, and have been in trouble with the law and gone to jail or been charged and been fined and on probation, done all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was the... I think it may have probably been the child sex jokes that pushed it over the line.
You know? Well, yeah, so things like that aren't forgivable.
No, I'm just saying, I think the material might have been...
Also largely the timing on the back of the Me Too movement. Too.
Yeah, exactly.
It was just bad timing for this kind of thing.
Bad timing all
resurface.
Around. I can understand their position, frankly. I can, really, honestly. You know, working for corporates, this kind of stuff happens, man. They're sticky.
But also, I feel like Disney's okay with someone, say, like Downey Jr., who's obviously had a troubled past, but has then publicly cleaned themselves up.
Sure.
And, you know, had a fresh start.
Danny Jr. was always a special case. He was loved by Hollywood. And he was given a lot of second chances before he finally turned his life around.
Yeah, exactly.
He was given a lot of chances. And I loved Danny Jr. And I loved his work in the 90s when he was going through those problems. He was a lucky boy to get as many chances as he got. Because he got...
Well, he was so damn talented. I think that's...
He was loved by the industry and by fans and every... Like, thank God it worked out, frankly. I mean, thank God. Because, like... but yeah, it's one of those things, man. Like, I mean, it does make you think, be careful of what you put online and be careful of the material that you kind of talk about and stuff. Like, it makes, you know, not that I would ever work in those kind of areas, but, you know, there is something to be said for being careful of what you do, just in terms of employers worldwide.
Everything you put on the internet is there forever. People can dig that up anytime they want.
75 episodes of Signal. You won't find anything controversial in here.
Oh,
you
never,
probably give never. Us a raise, I'd say, wouldn't you, Stu?
If anything, yeah.
Well, I'll take a 20K bump. You like enjoy the Signal so much? Sure, why not? Best to all employers ever who ever employed me. I mean, yeah, I'm always available for negotiations.
Oh, nice. That's good of you.
Continue, Stu. I always like the Stu news. You know, it's very much like... I mean, I always say Jimmy Olsen. But you, yeah, sometimes you go above Jimmy. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you're always knocking on Lois's door. Lois, there was another reporter as well. Kat Grant, I think her name was. And, like, she was okay, Stu. Yeah, but, like, was there a guy?
Clark Kent.
There was Clark.
Clark Kent.
Oh, there was Clark.
Oh, there was Clark.
Oh, okay,
I'll take
Clark.
That.
You'll take a mail run.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, I'll take Superman.
I'm very comfortable with Lois, my little notepad.
Yeah.
You know. But, I mean, so...
I mean, if you had a choice between Jimmy and Clark, I think...
I'd take Clark.
I think pretty much everyone would take Clark.
I'd take Clark. So, you know. But, I mean, unless you're a photographer, then you might take Jimmy.
Yeah, not a photographer.
You're a keen photographer.
Not that keen, no. okay, so Marvel's coming up to its official 10-year anniversary of the first Marvel film.
Wow, since Iron Man.
So Iron Man 1 came out basically 10 years ago in a couple of weeks.
That's awesome, man. How life has changed for the better in those 10 years.
Monstrously.
God.
So what they're doing to celebrate is, this is across the US, so it's US only, sure. Unfortunately for us.
Oh, well.
What they're doing is they're streaming every single Marvel movie across every IMAX theater in the States for 1 week.
Why isn't this worldwide? We've got IMAX theaters here.
We do. I don't know. I'm disappointed.
Yeah, me too.
I looked at it and I wanted to buy tickets.
Yeah, me too.
So basically starting on the 30th, so 2 weeks' time, they're running every single film sessions 1, 4, 7 and 10 p.m. every day for a week.
Wow.
In order. So August 30, you've got Iron Man, Hulk, Iron Man 2 and Thor.
Uh-huh.
That's a pretty fun day.
Yeah.
August 31, you've got Cap, Avengers, Iron Man 3, Thor 2.
Oh, jeez, I like that.
September 1, you've got Winter Soldier.
In a row?
This is a good day. Winter Soldier, Guardians, Avengers Age of Ultron and then Ant-Man.
That's good.
That's a fun day.
That's a strong one.
That's a strong day. But they seem to get better, though. September 2. Civil War, Doctor Strange, Guardians 2, Spider-Man Homecoming.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm there for that.
But then you... September 3, Ragnarok, Black Panther, Infinity War, Ant-Man and the Wasp.
That's very strong.
That's a very strong day.
They just get strong. It makes you realise how many good Marvel movies there are.
Oh, yeah.
Because they just... Strong, 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 hit, you know?
They're then going through a few of the greatest hits. So September 4, we get Iron Man, Spider-Man Homecoming, Black Panther, and Doctor Strange.
Cool.
Cool combo.
So is this all run together? Like it's one big movie marathon? Is that what it is?
You can buy tickets to individual screenings. You can also buy bulk packages where you can see all of them.
Okay, right.
I mean, this runs, obviously it's weekdays as well, starting at 1 p.m. So a lot of people can't attend all of them.
No.
But you could very easily go and see the 7 p.m. session every day for a week in an IMAX theatre.
It's a great idea. I think it's a really good idea. I'm disappointed they're not doing it here. You know what they are doing here tomorrow night in Australia, across all the event cinemas, they're doing the Elvis 68 comeback special on the big screen.
I can't imagine that being quite as popular.
it wasn't as popular with Michelle when I put it out there last night.
No, I don't blame her.
Don't worry, I have the DVD with the extended footage, so I'm okay. Still, I always like it when... I mean, forget if it's Marvel. I love it when they bring back old stuff on the big screen and it gets a re-release.
Well, this is actually the first time Iron Man, Incredible Hulk and Avengers have been seen on IMAX.
Bring it on.
They've never screened Iron Man on IMAX.
I tell you what, Iron Man holds up. I saw it not that long ago. It's still a fun movie.
It really does, doesn't
it? It's a really fun film.
Yeah. So if you're in the States, have a look. Regal Cinemas in the States is also offering a movie pass that lets you see all 20 films for $50.
Jesus.
That is $2.50.
$50.
$2.50 a film. As if you're not signing up for that right now. If I was in America, I would have done that.
Yeah, definitely.
Take my money. That's a ridiculous price.
God.
20 IMAX films for $50.
That's a great deal. Considering how much IMAX films are.
I know.
Expensive.
They're normally more expensive than a regular screening.
Yeah, definitely. 100%.
And 20 films, let's say discounted ticket price, you're looking at maybe $10.
Yeah, that's amazing.
For a screening? So for 20 films, you're normally looking at $200.
Well, Stu's bringing, sponsored by IMAX, this fucking episode, Stu. Like, I'm
Regal Cinemas.
Somebody's clearing your account over there.
Oh.
I don't know what else to say other than Stu's blowing me away with the news. Now, you've got to hear something about Disney, Stu. What's going on?
Yeah, so Disney came out in a press conference and clarified what's happening with the streaming services, the future of the MCU.
Okay. Well, what do they say?
So, streaming services, they are launching their own streaming service at the end of next year.
End of next year?
End of next year.
I thought
year.
It was the beginning of next year.
I think they might have a soft open.
Got
or
pushed back. Okay. Is it global?
Global.
Yes. Oh, yes.
They are also taking over complete control of Hulu.
Okay. Cool.
What they're going to be offering is combined packages for the Disney streaming service and Hulu.
Awesome.
As well as another smaller service that they control.
I've got Hulu. It's a good service.
So they're looking at combining the three. They haven't released a price for it yet.
Okay.
Anything
and
that
I want
is
the Disney service, like fucking nothing else.
I know. They've said anything that's in Australia, MA or R, right. But in the States, it's just like R-rated films.
Sure.
Are not going on the Disney streaming service.
Okay. Where are they going? Hulu.
They will go on Hulu.
Okay. Cool.
But Disney's going to remain
so
completely family friendly.
Disney, I can get
yes.
a discount. Okay.
Yeah, they're offering discounted packages if you buy them together.
Okay. Cool.
And anyone that I think already has a subscription to one can pay a discounted rate for the second or third.
Awesome.
They've also said anything that they currently have streaming on Netflix is going to see out their contracts.
Right.
For at least a few years.
Okay.
And then they're going to not go to the Disney streaming service. They're going to go to Hulu.
So what, like your Punishers, your Daredevil, that kind
yeah,
of stuff?
Because they're not family friendly.
Because they're, yeah, they're MA kind of.
Anything that's not 100% family friendly goes to Hulu as opposed to the streaming
all
service.
Right, okay.
They have said they are currently working on solo Fantastic Four films and X-Men films.
Oh, sweet. Good. Awesome.
That is going to be part
so
of...
That was officially said in the thing.
They are working on them, yes.
Well, that makes sense.
They basically said... They basically already said that they have enough creative control at this point that there's no problems for them to develop movies and start the process.
They know the deal's coming through so they can just get rolling.
And they've started that.
Man, that is going to be so big for us because that's going to inject so many cool characters into the... You know, into
it
the,
sounds like
the
what they're going to do is start pushing a lot of movies onto the streaming platform.
Right.
So you might get a lot of movies, let's say an Ant-Man 3.
Sure.
Might be streaming service.
I'll go straight to streaming.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
I might get a small release in cinemas, but...
I did hear the Star Wars movies aren't going to the streaming service. I heard that during the week. They're not going to the streaming... The Star Wars movies, like, you know, your Empire Strikes Back and all that kind of stuff, won't be available on the streaming service when it launches.
Not immediately, but I think they said the plans are eventually for everything to end up available on the streaming
service. It sounds like this Disney thing.
Every single Marvel movie to date will be available.
Great. Oh, fucking great.
So like, you can go back and watch all 20 movies. By then, it'll be 25, 26 movies.
This just means that the rest of my life, I'll be happy now. Because this kind of shit's lining up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's going to be... Oh, my life, I mean...
It's a one-stop shop.
Sometimes I think, what's the point? But now I'm like, yeah, there is a point.
Yeah.
I'm like, I've flipped in the last 10 years. This last 10 years has really rejuvenated my love of life. Ever since Iron Man debuted, things have gotten a lot fucking better around here. You know what I'm saying? Like... And this is just such great news. This really makes them feel like a major player as a streaming... Like, the kind of stuff they're going to put on there.
Yeah, basically, they are trying to compete with the likes of Netflix, with the likes of Amazon.
Yeah, I think
they're trying to... Like, Amazon's obviously the biggest one.
Sure.
And Apple is moving into that realm.
Yeah, they're all...
Alphabet and YouTube are moving into that realm.
Yeah.
So they're kind of announcing themselves as a legitimate competitor.
You've got to set yourself up. And, like, obviously Netflix has got a head start. You've got Disney have got a lot of content.
Put it this way, Disney will be within inside the top five.
Sure.
Like, companies worldwide.
For us, on this show, it's a very attractive offer, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's a really attractive... When you think of all the Star Wars material they can do too, like, Favreau shows only the beginning of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much material that I think it's going to be really interesting to watch. And
massive,
for all to be just sit down. I love being able to sit down, no fucking around, go to streaming, watch your stuff, in comfort of my own home.
Yeah.
And hello, you know.
The only thing that I'm slightly unsure of.
What's that?
Is that they release 100% of their content to a US audience.
Yes.
I don't know if we're going to get the same thing in Australia or the UK.
Australian,
or,
like, fucking,
so if you look at Netflix, Australian Netflix, which is Netflix.com, same as the US, we receive roughly a third.
Yeah.
Of
we
the
get
content.
We get all the Netflix original stuff, but outside of the Netflix original, we struggle with a lot of the stuff.
And it's partly because of distribution rights that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So we're getting roughly a third.
But what about if Disney are generating a lot of that content straight for their streaming service, you might stand a very good chance of getting it.
If they're putting it on with the intent of streaming it on the streaming service, then yes, we will get it.
Yeah, well, it makes Disney a real player. I hope they
We don't know if we're going to get things like the Netflix shows and stuff like that that were contracted to Netflix.
Yeah.
A lot of their films here are distributed through other companies.
Yeah. Well, Disney could be potentially be changing their model up a bit, though. If they're going to push everyone worldwide onto the streaming service, they're going
to... Their goal is. Their goal is to push everybody online.
That would be good for us, I'm telling you. If it moves that way, it would be good for us. I guess it's watch this space. That is cool, man. That is good news, Stu. Now, I had some news myself. The Tom Cruise Green Lantern rumors resurfaced today. It was people posting up the articles that we were talking about like 3 or 4 months ago, Stu, where Tom Cruise was linked.
Oh, we're ahead of the game.
Yeah. Now, apparently, Cruise was being heavily courted by Warners to play Hal Jordan, was their first choice to play as the lead. He was very interested, but refused to sign on because he has one caveat, which is apparently in the script that they were giving him, Hal Jordan does die in the conclusion of the movie, and Tom Cruise wanted that item of the script removed. And that was kind of... He wouldn't touch it unless they removed that. And that's kind of where the negotiation stalled. It sounded like this was nothing more than... When you read a lot of the news that comes out, stuff gets recycled a few months later, fresh again, but it's the same news. This seemed like it was pretty much the same story getting beaten down again.
This was the first time I've heard that Hal died in that script.
Oh, no, that detail was the new detail.
Yeah.
Like, other than that, even the original source of the article was saying they didn't really have much more to go on other than that little piece of information. It didn't sound like the
conversation. I kind of understand why Tom didn't want to do that.
Oh, me too.
He's currently looking... He's looking pretty healthy in Mission Impossible, but... No one turns down a second franchise.
No, exactly. And it's Tom Cruise. Like, you know, he's thinking, if you want me, like, I'm not dying at the end of the first one. Like,
yeah, no, give me something long term.
Yeah, no, it's typical negotiating with Tom Cruise. Like, he doesn't die in the first film.
Although, having said that, this is exactly what I said they should do. Bring in Hal Jordan and kill him off and then introduce a new
character. I don't know. I'm not in love with the idea of killing Hal. But then again, if you pitch to me John Stewart as a lead, I'd be happy with that.
Well, that's what I mean. Like you don't even have to do one lantern. You could do five of them.
Well, there's many that I sort of feel like, why kill Hal? You just do different lanterns, you know?
Yeah. The only reason I was saying kill Hal is I feel like it's a story we've been told and people have bad memories.
Oh, well, you mean from the Ryan Reynolds?
Well, that movie was terrible.
Sure, but there's a lot of. Oh, I don't know. Like Hal Jordan's very replaceable. He's pretty
exactly. Cool. And the other thing is, all of these you could do pretty much any lantern story with any lantern.
Yeah, true.
Like it's not like you couldn't do a Hal Jordan story that's written.
Yeah.
And run it with John Stewart.
Oh, totally agree.
Like
John Stewart in the animated show worked so well.
Yeah,
he was really good. I thought in the animated show. I like John Stewart. No, I'm definitely down for it. It's interesting to hear, because wasn't Mark Wahlberg, a couple of weeks ago, he was attached.
Or he was rumoured, yeah.
Well, there was a fucking news item that came out today where it goes, Mark Wahlberg's been caught to play Grenada, and I had the pleasure of typing to them, Siegel and Dim come this 2 weeks ago. Yeah. Like, and I made it seem like we'd actually done some fucking work. Like, as if we were like, you know.
I like to think we have.
We've done some.
I like to think we have.
Excuse me, we've done some.
We've done some.
Some. And ever since I went some.
Oh, yeah.
What is copy and paste? How much work is that?
I mean, you've pressed at least 3 buttons.
Someone had fucked. But someone had broken. Look, this is what annoys me when I'm covering the fucking news. Someone had already broken that story weeks ago, and some moron, and I won't name the site because it's an Australian-based site, broke that story like they were breaking it. And I'm like, we covered this 2 weeks ago. No response. They're that pathetic. Like, yeah. I'm one step away from fucking naming them, so we better move on before I bother. Because I'm only going to involve like an internet war. You know.
So at this point, it seems as though they still want Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
But they're not particularly willing to give him the franchise. I'd be pretty happy with Wahlberg as well.
I'd probably... Mostly it's an age thing. I'm sorry, Tom. But I feel like Wahlberg... He's got legs, you know he can play the role. I mean...
Both actors are getting pretty old, though.
Oh, Mark Wahlberg's, what, in late 40s? He's pretty fit, man.
Like, yeah,
he could punch it for 10 years if he had to.
He'd be pushing it the other 10 years.
Well, I've seen Mark Wahlberg. He does a lot of work, man. Mark Wahlberg doesn't seem to turn too many films down.
No, he doesn't. But, I mean, imagine casting a 25-year-old.
Sure.
You've definitely got 10, 15 years.
A lot cheaper, too, for the studio.
I mean, not necessarily. They could pick an A-list actor to do it.
Okay. Well, I mean, but you go for heavy hitters, Wahlberg and Tom Cruise. Like, they're aged stars, but who have a high quote, you know?
Oh, sure.
I don't know. Like, I don't think either are essential. I think you could cast well outside of them and do quite well. Like, yeah. Tom Cruise, I thought, was...
But you could go with someone a bit younger, like a John Boyega could do a John Stewart. No problem.
Is he... Who's he? He's Finn in Star Wars, yeah?
Finn in Star Wars.
I find him goofy, man. I'm not feeling it too much. Michael B. Jordan is John Stewart.
Michael B. Jordan could absolutely nail that.
I'm not a huge John Boyega fan. Like, I don't mind him, but I'm not like a super fan.
Yeah, well, I mean, Michael B. Jordan would be just as good,
I think he'd be better, yeah.
If you really wanted to go with someone that could play Hal Jordan, like, you've got things like Scott Eastwood.
He's a terrible actor. He's a really bad actor.
Yeah, but you kill him off after one movie.
Yeah, he certainly looks the part.
He could look the part for a movie, and I think he could do all right for a movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you who I don't want to go to. What's his name? Jai Courtney?
Oh, God, no.
Fuck, he annoys me. God, he annoys me.
The guy with the best agent in the universe.
I know.
Because somehow he can pull out of his ass like 10 flops in a row and still get A-grade movies.
And be bad in them as well. Be bad in just about every single one of them.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Like, did you see that Die Hard one that he tried to do?
Oh, I saw it. It was
terrible.
Like, Die Hard, we don't care anymore. Like, went from Die Hard with Avengers to Die Hard, Bruce Willis doesn't care.
Yeah.
Like, Bruce Willis is asleep. I love Bruce Willis, but he was never more asleep than in that movie.
Yeah.
That was a low point for the Die Hard franchise. I actually write that off in my head. I don't mind Die Hard 4, but Die Hard 5, Live Free and Die Hard is fucking woeful.
It was terrible.
Really bad film.
So, yeah, I don't want Jai Courtney there.
No. Yeah. Jai Courtney, please stay at home. Count your money. The only Jai Courtney performance I liked was in Suicide Squad. I thought he was quite funny.
Yeah, when he was Boomerang.
That was his best performance by a long way.
Yeah, because it wasn't a serious performance. He could just goof around.
Yeah, he could show a bit of comedy. He actually has a bit of comedy to him, but unfortunately his goofiness counts again. He's a good of a goofy actor. He's very obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a fan. And I hate to say that because as an Aussie, I usually stick by them, but unfortunately there I burnt my bridges. Sorry, Jai. We probably won't get him on the signal now. Do you think Jai Courtney would come on the signal? I mean,
he's done everything else. Why?
Yeah, he doesn't call it that much.
Call his agent. His agent's just, yes. That's what that dude's job is.
You know, I've actually got the point for where your career is tanked. It's Rove doing Doctor Who on the ABC Digital Service. That's when you... I'm telling you, if Jai Courtney ever reaches that, he knows... I think that's as low as you can get, actually, in terms of, like, still having some sort of a persona. It's like, what are you doing? I'm doing a Doctor Who show. Oh, you're on Doctor Who. I'm on the talk the review show. Oh, where's that? ABC. I'm on ABC Digital Service.
Well, ABC, ABC 2, ABC 3.
Well, like, we get 7 to 10 viewers.
Yeah, it's like midnight. Midnight on ABC 2. Yeah.
I just think that's so fucking woeful.
Yeah.
That's embarrassing, frankly.
That's pretty much the worst.
It's, what do they say? This is the darkest timeline.
Community, like, yeah.
That's probably what Rove says to himself at night. He looks in the mirror.
Puts on his little paper goatee and just, this is the darkest timeline. Yeah.
Oh, it's just too funny, man. Now, look, Stu, I've got some breaking news. Are you ready for this? The internet went wild today. Tom Holland posted on his Instagram that his stunt double is going to be drenched with water, and fans were going crazy, speculating that Hydro Man is going to be a villain in Far From Home. What do you think of this one, Stu?
I think this is the biggest reach I've heard of in a while.
Hydro Man's woefully bad.
Like, Hydro Man is not even D-list villain.
Yeah, he's real bad.
And Tom Holland has just said that his stunt man's going to be wet.
Couldn't that just be a stunt? Like,
couldn't that just be a scene underwater? Yeah, it could be. It's exactly what it could be.
Yeah. But these guys are
that's exactly what it likely is.
Was this rumor started by Hydro Man's creator, desperate for a check?
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, we'll put it, like,
I've seen Hydro Man in the comics recently. Like, no, I've seen him in the animated show from the 90s. That's where I know him from.
Yeah.
He's not very
well. I mean, I remember in interviews recently, Chris Pratt was saying that with the new Jurassic World movie, They had that scene where he was in the sphere that had just plunged off a cliff and was underwater.
Yes, I remember, yeah.
That scene took maybe 5 minutes of screen time, if that.
I thought it was one of the best scenes of the film.
Yeah, but maybe 5 minutes, if that, of the screen.
Yeah, yeah, when he's under there.
They filmed that over about a month and a half.
Oh, really? A month and a half?
He spent roughly 4 or 5 weeks completely underwater for a day at a time.
Oh, that would be painful. Imagine if it's cold.
It is. It's like, it's not much above, like, room temperature.
The only good thing with Jurassic World, whatever that was called, part two, was that you finally saw the underwater dinosaurs that I've always wanted to see. They got a bit of play at last.
Ugh.
Not much.
Yeah.
But I hated that movie. But,
yeah, it was a bad movie.
That scene wasn't too bad. That scene
What I'm saying. Like, that took, let's say, a month of filming.
Yeah.
And Tom's tweeting out that his stunt double's going to get wet. That means a 5-minute scene of water.
Yeah, I'm really surprised Hydro Man caught on, but apparently it did. It blew up the internet for a while.
Yeah, see, this is just people going, oh, my God. Some
hardcore
Spider-Man let's Google a water-based Spider-Man villain, and that's the first that came with
it. Oh, so they were just sort of like...
No, like if you had to come up...
Spider-Man fans will go, Hydro-Man's real, real obscure.
Yeah, but if you had to come up with a water-based Spider-Man villain...
Yeah, I can't.
I'd struggle.
I would say Hydro Man. That's the only one I can think of.
Exactly, and that's what they've done. They've just...
I guess you've got Sandman. Sandman's a much bigger villain in the Spider-Man universe, though, than Hydro Man.
Massively.
Hydro Man's minor, man.
Oh, yeah.
Real minor. I mean, I can't even remember a comic he's been in. I remember him in... I think he makes an appearance in one of my older trades, like 80s trades. I think Roger Stern or Tom DeFalco, he might turn up. But that's like one appearance, man, that I can remember. Yeah. And he is in the 90s show for one episode. Carrie Fisher's brother said that the Carrie Fisher footage in the new Star Wars movie will draw on footage cut from Last Jedi as well as Force Awakens, Stu.
Yeah, this is what we heard the other week. That they're not going to, like, CGI her that badly.
No, well, apparently, yeah. I mean, recasting her. You heard the rumour that Meryl Streep was going to be recast as her. I was like, really?
I mean, Meryl Streep could do it.
Meryl Streep could certainly do it, but I mean...
I don't know why Meryl you were...
that desperate to, like, you know, play a Star Wars role? Like, she's pretty fucking...
Well, no, I don't know why you'd pay for someone of Meryl Streep's calibre
and
then put a CGI thing over her face.
Yeah, I thought...
Because, like, clearly they wouldn't be using her actual face.
But it's not like I've gone, oh, who could possibly fill Carrie Fisher's shoes? Oh, Meryl Streep.
Yeah, but that's the answer to every question.
Just because Meryl
Streep... Who should be cast as... the new Green Lantern, or Meryl Streep could knock it out of the park.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not wrong.
No, she's very good.
Meryl Streep could knock that role out of the park. She's a
fantastic actress. I've always loved her, but...
But she wouldn't...
But she also doesn't do genre movies that I can think of. I can't think of any really big blockbusters she's done. Like, can you? She's mostly sort of...
Blockbusters that she... I mean...
The River Wild with Kevin Bacon in the 90s, that's about as...
Well, she did, like Devil Wears Prada, but that was...
That's more her sphere.
Yeah.
She does sort of like glammy sort of dramas, you know, and...
Oh, it's definitely more drama work.
Acting, you know, Bridges of Madison County and many movies that she's done. She did work with Woody Allen, like, I mean... But what I'm saying is I haven't seen her in a Star Wars movie is what I'm trying to say.
No, I can't think of a...
Or a Marvel movie.
A sci-fi movie or a...
Yeah.
Fantasy movie that she's been in.
I can't think of it, you know, I can't think of anything where she's doing that kind of stuff.
If she was, it wasn't in the last decade.
Like honestly, I can't...
It's early career when she's still building her reputation. But her early career
was like Manhattan.
I would have thought, yeah. So
like that.
Yeah, that...
Kramer vs.
I don't know where you have had that rumour, though, Dave. That's...
What? No, that was a huge rumour. When Carrie Fisher died, she was... Lots of people were saying that, but I think it was just fans.
Yeah, I think that's
I don't think Meryl Streep's publicist was putting it out there. I don't know, it just doesn't feel like her direction of her career at all. Arnie teased a beard look for the new Terminator movie. Where are you on this, Stu? Like, he, you know, basically a bearded Arnie kind of helps him look a bit not quite as sort of old.
Oh, really? He looks so much older with a beard.
I don't know, man.
His beard's pure silver.
Okay. Well, are you feeling it, though, for the
Terminator? This is just Arnie too lazy to shave.
Yeah, Arnie.
Like, he's
we've all been there.
He's sent tweets out in the last couple of weeks with a beard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just him not wanting to shave for a movie role.
Fair enough. Are you excited for the Terminator? Are you seeing it in cinemas?
Not in any.
Are you seeing it in cinemas?
No.
Okay. We are, because Michelle's a huge Terminator fan.
I mean, I didn't see the last one in the cinemas, and I don't.
Genesis wasn't too bad. It really.
It's not worth.
It's a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, see, that's not worth spending money to do.
No, it's a 6 out of 10. No. So you're the financial manager, Stu. You make the decisions, don't you? You know, it's kind of like, do we see it? And she just, no.
We're not. 6 out of 10? Pass. Like, there's no, I don't know. If you go for something like an Ant-Man.
Sure.
Or a lower tier Marvel movie.
Sure.
There's a level of continuity that you kind of feel obligated to see.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I imagine I would be willing to see a less good Marvel movie in cinemas.
Sure. Did you see Incredible Hulk? Did you see Incredible Hulk in cinemas? I did. For sure. I fucking did because I was addicted at that point.
Yeah, I did.
It was very early on, man. I mean, you know, very early on in the piece. I think, was it the second movie?
Yeah, it was second.
Look, as a Terminator fan, excitement's probably not the right word. I'm trying to keep my I'm hopeful is the word I'm trying to find here. I'm hopeful that they come up with something. Tim Miller directing.
Look, if it gets rave reviews and everyone's saying it's like 9 out of 10.
This is the best one since Judgment Day. Well, it better be the best one since Judgment Day.
I'm talking like best one since T2. Then, yeah, I'm going to go and see it.
Yeah, that's
I'll jump on that bandwagon then, but...
Fair enough, man.
Until then, I've got no... I don't know.
I'll give you my score.
I've got no love for the franchise.
I'll give you my score, Stu. What I won't do, though, is what I always do after a movie. I always get too excited in the intervening...
I was going to say, I always hear your ratings, and then I ask you a day later.
They plunge, yeah.
And I'm like, how's I sitting with you today, Dave?
Justice League didn't do well on the sleep.
No. Justice League was losing points by the hour.
It was. It really struggled. Spider-Man 3 was like that, too. I kind of convinced myself that I enjoyed it. And then I was like, the more I thought about it, the more I realized that it was just, it was so many missed opportunities. That was what made me sad about, and same with X-Men 3. I enjoyed X-Men 3 in cinemas, but it's on reflection that you think it's a movie of just so many missed choices and bungled choices, basically.
Yeah.
It's sad. Now, Stu, out of the computer, Crouch dropped in with some big fucking news. Bruce Lee, and you might remember this, Quentin Tarantino's movie, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And I was saying they were going to be casting celebrities. And Stu, you cast so many aspersions my way saying that wouldn't be happening. Well, Bruce Lee has been cast.
Uh-huh.
And Steve McQueen has been cast. Both of them are going to be in... The guy who's playing Steve McQueen is the guy from Homeland and Billions. I haven't got his name off the top of my head, but he's like the lead in Billions against Paul Giamatti. And he's also... Wasn't he, you know, first four seasons of Homeland? Pretty good actor. He's playing McQueen and an Asian guy, Ming Mu, I believe his name is. I'm not sure that's the correct pronunciation. He's playing Bruce Lee. So I've never heard of him in my life, Stu. But he's playing Bruce Lee. Two major fucking players in the late 60s. Now, Stu, probably time for you to roll up the apologies because where's Sammy? And where's Dino? Close friend of Sharon Tate.
Yeah, not going to happen.
Okay, well, I'm pretty happy that Bruce Lee and Steve McQueen, two of my favourites, are in the movie. I'm actually pretty fucking excited. This Tarantino thing is really starting to take off in my imagination.
Yeah, see, I'm really worried about that.
Why?
I just feel like it's going to be a giant letdown for you now.
No, man, I love Steve McQueen.
But there's no way this movie can be better than what you've imagined over the last decade.
This is the problem. With Steve McQueen...
Like, every time they drop a name like that...
Yes.
You're imagining the world's greatest possible option.
Yeah, I'm imagining Steve McQueen.
Yeah, I know.
Rolling in, you know...
Realistically, we might get like a two-minute scene.
Yeah, you
want to. And then you're going to be so upset.
Well, I don't know what they're going to do, man. Who knows? Tarantino might be able to spin it pretty interestingly. I think you're right, though. There is a danger when you cast such icons, like Bruce Lee, icon, Steve McQueen, icon, you know, and if they've done Sinatra, icon, it's tough with icons because, like, they're so well known. I almost think it's really hard to cast. So I think the guy playing Homeland. Visually, it's not a bad fit. And the guy playing Bruce Lee, you're like, okay, I can see it. But, like, there's a difference between just visual. I mean, they had such mannerisms. Like, Bruce Lee had so much about him, you know?
Yeah.
He brought so much kind of, like, intensity just to his presence. Like, he literally kind of, like, almost trembled with, like... He was that full of power, really, Bruce Lee. And Steve McQueen, just the icon of cool. I mean, it's tough. It's like, I don't know. Yeah, I am sort of like, I wonder what Tarantino will do. And whether it's going to be, are they walking out of the party as, you know, the main cast comes in? Because, of course, the main cast is going to be side characters, you know. Not side characters, but unknown characters, is what I'm trying to say. Like, DiCaprio is not playing Steve McQueen. He's playing his own character. They're just at the same parties kind of thing is what I'm imagining. Don't you think? What do you think?
At best, yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of parties at that time. And where's Sammy? Because he was all over these parties in LA, man. Like, Sammy was everywhere through these parties. He was known as the guy that was at every party. That's why I'm saying Sammy Davis Jr. is a fucking lock in this movie. I won't be surprised if Sammy Davis Jr. gets cast. And I can't wait to wipe that grin off your face, Stu, because, like, you think it's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen. I'm still waiting for it.
Yeah, because they haven't cast yet. Because, as always, Sammy gets cast as, like, third banana.
You know they're filming it right now, right?
Okay.
Like, they are midway through filming it.
Okay. All
right. They're running a little late if they're still trying to find someone. Well, like, they're in the 11th hour right now.
Cheadle? Where's Cheadle? He can play him. He's played him before.
Who knows where the fuck Cheadle is? I would have thought if you needed to cast someone, that's probably the only phone call you'd make, right? And Cheadle says, maybe next time. You go, oh, well, fuck, we'll cut that from the movie.
I know, in my imagination, this movie...
That's what I'm saying, this is a worrying time.
In my imagination, Sammy's working the barbecue almost, do you know what I mean?
You need an 11 out of 10 for this movie to match whatever you're thinking.
This movie, for me, you know my love of, like, that late 60s period into the 70s. I mean, I am so at the fucking opening night of this Tarantino film. I always love Tarantino, I know we both do, Stu. This movie, I'm a bit too excited, I think.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think I'm getting a bit
exactly what I just said, yeah. Do you want to know how I know you're too excited?
Why?
You go, Bruce Lee, he's played by some Asian guy. His name is written right in front of you.
Ming Mo?
Yeah, no, Mike Mo. Oh. Not even close.
Oh, I'm close.
And you come in with Ming Mo, which I can't tell, but it might be racist. I'm not sure.
Oh, I got the last name right. Mo. Or Moo. I don't know how you pronounce that one.
Mo.
Well, whatever. Yeah. Like, have you ever heard of him, Stu? Has Mike Mo ever come across your...
No, mind? But when the name is written literally in front of me, I'm reasonably confident I can read that.
Well,
anyway. That's why I was laughing before. I'm like, not even Dave could stuff up this name. Like, it's Mike. M-I-K. That's like the easiest name in the English language.
I gave it some Asian flavour. I gave it a Ming, man. Like, give me a fucking break.
Yeah, that's where I'm like, this is racist. I can't tell anymore. Like, this is Dave. Like, he means well, but I honestly can't tell anymore.
Look, I'm excited for fucking... I love Bruce Lee, man. I fucking love Bruce Lee.
Oh, so there you go, yeah.
I'm down for this shit. Like, I wouldn't mind... Okay, I'm getting a bit excited now, but I was going to say Chuck Norris involved. Maybe they do a bit of a fight like they did in Way of the Dragon, you know?
See, something Chuck like Norris would be willing to be in this movie.
Yeah.
Let alone, like, someone playing Chuck Norris. Chuck Norris would be in the movie.
It'd be kind of funny to get Chuck in playing himself, but, like, he's, like, 70.
Play Chuck's dad or something. Or yeah,
that would be kind of cool. Why not? I mean, I don't know where the storyline is, but I've got
there is no, like, at this point, there's no story, Dave.
Right now, all I've got is a party.
This is just you with 2 hours of impersonators on screen.
And you know that I'm trying to shoot on Sammy because behind you comes Dino. And if Dino's there, where's Frank? Exactly. And if I can get all three in, then I'm just happy. I'm just a happy chappy.
Yeah. You know? And then you're just casting everyone that was remotely related to them. Like,
well, I think they could control the room. I think you put them in a room, you're walking through... Okay, let me just picture it for you, Stu. Okay, you just come out of the conversation with McQueen and Bruce Lee. Maybe they're doing a bit of a throwdown, kind of pretend fight. You know, DiCaprio's walking through, opens another door. Who's in there? It's Sammy working the room, and behind him's Dino and Frank on a couch. They start, there's a little song going on, kind of Ocean's 11 style. Maybe Dean gets up to the piano. Sammy does a bit of tap dance and that kind of thing. That's kind of, and that's what a fucking scene.
And, yeah, I'm walking out of that. That's me done.
I'm getting deep into my popcorn by that point. I'm getting very excited in the cinema. I'm deep into my frozen Coke. I'd be squealing with delight, but
I'm leaving more because of the awkward sounds that you'd be making. Just that's uncomfortable.
Singing along badly.
That's uncomfortable. Yeah, I'm out.
Anyway, Doctor Who with Jodie Whittaker confirmed to return to screens by October, Stu. So it's quite soon now. The new Doctor Who.
That's good. It feels like it's been a long time.
It's been fucking ever. Like, yeah.
So we'll get a season, and then that'll pretty much run right into the Christmas special.
Yes, which is that's a speculation. Yeah,
that's cool.
Was it only last Christmas that? Was it last Christmas that he regenerated?
Yeah.
She feels longer, doesn't it?
But they didn't do a season that year, did they?
No, there was just a Christmas episode.
Might have been, but I think it was April or something last year.
You're right.
So it's been about 18 months and we've had a season.
It was a good last episode, too, with the crossover with the Sidemen story and stuff. That was cool.
Yeah.
No, I really enjoyed the end of that.
I'm always pretty happy with Christmas specials.
Oh, me too. The Doctor Who Christmas specials are major. But
they've always been pretty good.
Yeah. I always get annoyed because in the UK they're watching on Christmas Day, but we have to wait until Boxing Day. Because we're ahead of time.
Yeah, we are. It's they're behind time. They're slowing everyone up. It's annoying.
Now, Stu, I've got some news here. This news came in as I was on the train, just getting off the train to come to the show tonight. Rambo 5, some details have leaked. The new movie will have Sylvester Stallone back in the role of his classic character, John Rambo, and it's titled Rambo Last Blood. That's a good title.
Thank God it's last.
The storyline will involve a settled and retired Rambo who is drawn back into action by a journalist to save a group of girls from a sex trafficking ring. Bring it on, man. Now, that actually sounds pretty fucking intense. I'm ready for this.
I've never understood these movies.
Well, not even the first one? First Blood's a good movie.
Oh, no. Rambo, I get.
Sure.
But the idea that a journalist goes, oh, look, an undercover sex trafficking ring.
Calling John Rambo.
Let's call Rambo, a retired former...
They might have been Vietnam vets together or something. John Rambo...
I'm sorry,
he's a fucking machine, man.
Rambo is not your first call in that scenario.
I don't know.
Rambo is who you call when every single legitimate person thinks you're a crazy nutter and they don't take your
calls.
Maybe
that's where it goes. Like, Rambo is a guy with a good heart, man. He's just like a fucking weapon, though. I mean, he was last seen in Borneo, I think, or was it Burma? Like, that last Rambo movie was very violent, man. Like, there was a death count in the thousands where he was going against, like, the regime with all the...
Well, I'm pretty sure he still holds the world record for the most on-screen deaths in a movie or something.
Which one is your favourite? Because mine, I must admit, although First Blood's very good, I have a soft spot for Rambo Part 2. First Blood Part 2, where he goes to Vietnam. Well, that's the biggest grossing one. That was the one that blew up big in the mid-80s, like, you know, height of the Cold War kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which one's your favourite if you have to have one? First Blood?
Probably First Blood.
First Blood's a good movie.
That's one I've seen the most, put it that way.
Yeah. Well, First Blood's a serious movie where he's just a ruthless Vietnam veteran. And if you recall, well before that became fashion, it wasn't that long after the war, it was less than 10 years.
Yeah.
And he's going through the town and it's, what's his name? I always forget the actor's name, the Irish guy. Is it Brian Dennehy? Something like that. He's the cop. And you know, and then they hose him down. And then Rambo just goes a bit off. He gets flashbacks to how he was tortured and stuff in Vietnam.
Yeah, and like those movies made sense.
Yeah.
Like he would often stumble into these scenarios or get dragged in.
Yeah. Well, Rambo 2, he goes over to free the POWs.
Yeah, exactly. But he doesn't he get hired as like a charter or something? And then he sees it all go bad.
That's the last one, isn't it? Yeah, the one set, I think, in Burma, where he's retired. And he's like a fisherman by himself and he gets dragged in.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's the last one. The one before that's Rambo 3, where he goes to Afghanistan, which is terrible. And they just tried to redo Rambo 2, which was huge. But yeah. Like, there'd been 5 years between them. Rambo 3 is woefully bad.
But like, this is a Rambo that's meant... Like, the new Creed movie that came out was brilliant because he was a retired boxer. He owned a little, like, restaurant.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was asked to train someone else. And that makes perfect sense.
Yes.
But when you're a retired veteran,
yeah,
and you've just got a penchant for blood,
He's a disturbed guy, Rambo. He's got a lot of ghosts, man.
True, but who calls him up and says, "Got a job for you, buddy"?
Well, who knows, man? I mean, watch your space.
Oh, the police aren't taking any of my calls.
I'm intrigued by the storyline though, because maybe Rambo's got like a daughter or something that's caught into it. That kind of thing. Something personal drag Rambo into it. The stake needs to be personal, man.
For me, this feels like we didn't need this reboot.
Oh, we didn't need it. Sly wants it. That's
like
it.
I'm happy to see him play, Rocky again, but as a trainer and off to the side in Creed 2.
But you know what happened? Rambo, when it made money, when the last Rambo came out, made good money in the opening weekend. Sly was already talking about the sequel at the red carpet. He always does.
Sly talks about the sequel before the movie's
out. Does it every single time.
He was talking about Expendables 3 before Expendables 1 came out.
Yeah, I know.
Like, he's all on board the franchise.
For me, and I'll say this as a Rambo fan, I will watch this on streaming happily, but I probably won't be in cinemas.
Yeah, I'm probably on the same boat.
Yeah. I mean, I'm interested because, like, I'm invested in the character. I think it's a cool character and a cool concept, but I'm not like, I take my money at top price at cinemas, you know?
No, once I can stream it, sure.
Yeah, definitely. I want the bandolier on him kind of thing, the bullets on him, that kind of thing. Get the machine gun really firing.
You just got to watch the Expendables. It's better than this movie will be.
Yeah, probably. Stu, X-Men Disassembled is coming in November. Will be a 10-part weekly storyline told in Uncanny X-Men, which is coming back. Matthew Rosenberg is one of the writers.
That sounds pretty good.
Stuff. Yeah, well, then they're finally... I mean, it's about time they're back in Uncanny X-Men. Really?
Although it sounds like it's not going to last too long if the story is disassembled.
No, I think it's ongoing. I think it's the Uncanny X-Men, like, whatever the storyline is, I don't know. But, like, this is supposed to be their big push to make Uncanny X-Men. C.B. Sobolski was saying they want to make Uncanny X-Men the number one title for Marvel again. Yada, yada, yada. Because the X-Men titles have slumped so massively.
Well, the X-Men titles haven't been good for a long time.
They've been slumping for ages. Now, Stu, what about this one? Female Avengers movie. We've all heard about it before. Evangeline Lilly said Captain Marvel should lead the all-female Avengers.
Well, thanks, Captain Obvious.
Yeah, I was kind of like, yes, I agree.
Like, I mean, she's been saying this for months, by the way. She came out and said this on day one of, there might be an Avengers movie with female cast. Evangeline was like, yep, I'm in the movie. No one's told me about it, but I'm in it. Sure. And Captain Marvel will lead it. That's...
Well, okay, but...
And the rest of the world just went, you're not even... You haven't been asked to in the movie, first of all.
Yeah, you're not directing the film.
You are barely a superhero. You are not making this list.
No, you're... Like Ant-Man, you're lucky to be included.
Yeah,
like,
pretty much.
Frankly, you know.
Yeah. Like, Black Widow will make the cut because ScarJo's insanely popular.
Can I ask you a question? Don't mean to sound sexist, but how is Michelle Pfeiffer looking in Ant-Man the Wasp? Because you know I'm a huge fan.
I'm still upset that you haven't seen it.
So, well, I'm so sorry. But, that's, like...
You've let everyone down.
Now. Okay.
And there's no excuse.
You haven't answered my question. How was she looking? Because I liked her still in Orient Express. Like...
Oh, she looked pretty much exactly the same.
Okay. She's a
wonderful... She hasn't aged a lot in the last 2 years.
She's a wonderful lady. She's a wonderful lady. I've always said that. Okay. So what about this? Infinity War director confirmed that Shuri's the smartest MCU character.
The Russo brothers did a breakdown of every character in Infinity War.
Where was Tony Stark?
What do you mean?
In the intelligence rankings.
Oh, they didn't rank them on intelligence.
Oh, I thought that's exactly what they were doing. Oh.
No, I literally just told you what they did.
What did they do?
And you interrupted me with, sorry. Where was Tony Stark?
Well, continue, Stu, sorry.
They did an interview where they listed all of the characters in Infinity War and basically gave a 2-line synopsis and backstory.
Okay.
So it was, we have Black Panther, he's the king, he is the Panther through fighting rituals.
Right.
What his power set is and that sort of thing. So it was a very basic...
And so her's the smartest character in the MCU.
And yeah, they basically said she's the smartest character in the MCU.
She's had a pretty cool setup in Black Panther, I thought.
Yeah, massively
pretty
so.
Pretty fucking... Did she survive the dusting? I don't remember. Did she?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm just, you know, a lot of people out there are saying that she could beat Black Panther kind of thing.
Well, I mean, she is in the comics, so.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I think it's a good idea.
Actually, I'm not sure we've seen her post-snap.
I don't know. I don't remember if she crumbled or not. I can't remember. It's available digitally now, actually, for Infinity War. It's just come out.
It's available on every platform. As of 2 days ago, it came out on Blu-ray and DVD.
We'll be watching tomorrow night in this very household. Michelle and myself may sit down and watch Infinity War again.
That's a pretty good option.
Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty happy with it. Now, I don't know, man. Like, yeah, to me, she's right up there. I was just wondering, was this kind of a bit of political correctness? Like, what if Reed Richards comes in? Is he going to be kind of second place to her? Or is it about equal? I mean,
personally, Reed's always been considered the smartest.
Sure.
But... It doesn't really worry me if they put him equal or second place. Yeah. It doesn't...
This whole ranking thing, I find one of the most painfully boring things in Marvel, where they're like, most intelligent, you know?
I mean, they made it pretty clear that Tony and Bruce were pretty similar.
Sure.
Tony probably had the edge, but they were pretty similar.
Yeah. Bruce has a lot of problems.
Yeah, but still an incredibly gifted scientist.
Definitely, yeah.
And then you saw in Infinity War, Shuri was just, like, almost humiliating Bruce with... Why didn't you do this to him, to Vision, when she's like assessing him?
Yep.
So, like, she's pretty clearly smarter than Bruce.
Okay.
So, I mean, this makes sense.
She had some cool fucking shit in Black Panther. I thought some of the cool scenes were that in that little basement thing she's got. Like, I really dug that kind of stuff. Now, Stu, the Uncharted movie has a script. It is near in production. Do they have a star? Have they actually cast someone as Nathan Drake?
Not as far as I know.
Like, this is what I'm like, you know, do you have a script? Okay, there's a lot of movies out there that have scripts.
A lot of people... this is another movie coming from a video game.
Sure.
Traditionally, terrible place to look for movies.
Well, they keep trying, don't they?
They keep trying. This feels very much like a male version of Tomb Raider.
Yeah, and with a heavy influence of Raiders of the Lost Ark, too. Heavy influence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the new Tomb Raider movie didn't do well at all.
No. I love the games. I love the Uncharted games.
Yeah, but they just don't translate to the big screen that well.
No. Well, I can foresee. If you're really going to do a proper Uncharted game movie, the budget would have to be massive. Massive.
I don't know. I'm never that hyped for video game movies.
Well, we've been let down so many times. Like, I was hyped for Assassin's Creed, and I thought it was one of the worst movies I've ever seen. And yeah. I love that game series, and I thought they might actually, with Fassbender, do something worthwhile. And we watched Tomb Raider, and I was bored.
Well, they cast well. Like, Alicia Vikander, brilliant actress.
You were excited. You kept telling us how brilliant she was. I turn it on, and I turn around at Michelle and go, what is this?
Yeah, terrible. Michael Fassbender, amazing actor. Yeah. But that movie was awful.
It's a shit movie, though.
Like, it happens pretty much every time as well.
Assassin's Creed Origins, and it's a fucking wicked story set in ancient Egypt, dude. Like, I don't understand how hard it is. I just think that the studios don't know how to adapt, basically. I've always had a script in my head for you. Ever played Gauntlet, the video game?
No, I don't think so.
It's a fucking wicked video game from the 80s. And I've always said I could make a wicked fucking movie script over that. You need someone to whip up a good script, but then you also need the right amount of money. I thought Tomb Raider, tried, but it was just dull. You know? I mean, I preferred the original Angelina Jolie movie to that one.
I mean, some things just don't translate well. The puzzles that players go through mid-game...
Yeah, I know.
They never translate well.
No, I agree.
And yet, the movies keep trying to put them in because it's more authentic.
Your favourite video game movie, what is it? Because I've got one. It might surprise you. What's yours?
No, not really.
I've got one, Mortal Kombat.
Mortal Kombat was terrible.
Well, it was shit, but like for me, it was a lot of fun. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Oh, there's plenty of movies you can hate watch.
Yeah. Like Street Fighter.
Street Fighter was bad. The Mario Brothers one, that's probably the worst movie I've ever seen.
That's considered one of the worst.
But I will hate watch that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know, there's plenty of good movies where they had video game characters in them.
Sure. Well, what about, it's not really an
like
original...
Ready Player One, I would say
is... Wreck-It Ralph? Love that movie.
Yeah, I mean, Wreck-It Ralph is...
I reckon it's a brilliant movie. I love it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's based on a video game, though. I think it's...
No, it's not. It is
a video game.
Yes, it's a critique on the whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same way that Jumanji is...
Yeah. But that's the thing. They can do almost it, but they just can't quite do the actual adaptation.
No, they're fine with running a movie that's about people in a game.
Like, Ready Player One's a good example. I thought pretty decent attempt.
Ready Player One was, pretty good.
Yeah. Like, Warcraft, I would say Warcraft isn't...
Warcraft wasn't good.
No, it's not, but the standard is so low for these video game movies that it's better than a lot of them. It's about a 5.5 out of 10.
Yeah.
I'd say most of them. I'd say Assassin's Creed's like a 2 out of 10. I put Tomb Raider at about 4.5. Like, it's not so bad you can't watch it, but at most it's a 5.
Yeah.
There's just something weird about Hollywood, isn't there? They keep trying, and you can see why, because the audience video games are so massive. Like, I've always said, what about GTA? A fucking GTA movie, I'd be down for that.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of things, like GTA and some of the Final Fantasies as well.
Oh, yeah.
There's some amazing stories.
Well, they have made some fantasy animated movies of Final Fantasy. I've not really watched them, but I know they have.
Yeah, they did Advent Children for Final Fantasy VII.
What was it like? I haven't watched it. Any good?
Not really. No. It didn't live up to the hype.
Maybe it's because the game is just better. Like, look, I reckon you could do a really...
It's a different style. Like, it's... With a game, it's you're the participant. You are in it.
Yes.
So you're automatically more invested.
Well, like in GTA, you're running all those missions and shit. You're doing so much stuff. But, like, seriously, it'd have to be like a 20-hour movie to capture. And would it be that interesting to a viewer?
Well, no, but you'd run it something like The Departed as opposed to...
Yeah.
Watching 20 hours of you doing, like, shitty missions where you're like, drive this package to the other side of town,
what about
the police will chase you.
What about me when I get on the tennis court? Because in GTA, I've obviously spent a lot of time on tennis court as Michael and playing with my stocks and stuff. I used to roll around as Michael all the time.
That's the saddest thing to do in GTA.
I don't know, golf in GTA? Oh, fuck yeah, man. Put me on that golf course. I was a monster on that golf course.
So sad.
GTA
4.
Gay Tony, or whatever it was, the side mission, the side quests.
I was just driving around seeing how many stars, like...
How good were you at bowling? Did you ever take anyone bowling?
I never did any of those, like...
Oh, you got to take the hookers out on a date to bowling and stuff. You see, you get sex in the car and stuff. Like, yeah, for sure.
That's the saddest thing I've heard.
Oh, no, dude, you got to take them on the date to bowling. That's a must.
That's so sad.
Well, you say it's sad.
No wonder you think this movie is 20 hours
long. I unlocked the achievements.
You're spending half your time taking hookers bowling and getting your handicap down on the
par three. Oh, the fucking golf. I was addicted to the mini golf, man. The mini golf was intense because you went with a couple of other guys and there was a lot of competition. You could play for money, I think. I forget if that's exactly right, but I think you could. I loved the Battle of the Gay Tony, whatever it was called, the expansion pack on GTA 4. I fucking loved that shit. I was into that big time. That was supposed to be like a 10-hour quest. I spent about 100 hours in that side mission because I loved the world. Niko Bellic, man, in GTA 4 was one of my favourite characters. He's a guy that's focused on money. Niko Bellic, for me, was one of the gods of GTA. If you had to pick a GTA movie, a GTA game to do a movie on, what would it be? Would it be San Andreas? A lot of people say San Andreas.
If I was going to do a movie tomorrow, it'd be probably Vice City.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, yeah, sure.
Just because it's a reasonably early setting.
Yeah.
And you can then spin that off into things like San Andreas and Modern Day and...
Fuck yeah. You know, dude, I'm old enough that I played the GTA on the, the Mega Drive where it was a top-down version.
I played that, but it was on... I think they've re-released it on PlayStation 1.
It was pretty good. You could get out of the car. Yeah, I played that. Yeah, you could get out of the car. You could see, and then they made the big leap, I think, in GTA 3 to, you know, the model we know now.
Yeah, but GTA 1 and 2 were the bird's eye view.
Yeah,
I played those.
Yeah, they're pretty fucking good. Did I just talk about this? We could do a whole GTA podcast. Tune in, kids. Can you imagine us? Can you imagine us just picking it apart, man, like in GTA podcasting?
God, that'd be a great 2 hours and then never again.
For me, like, it could just go on and on. I said to you, if we were in that, what's that thing called in Ready Player One? What's it called again?
The Oasis.
The Oasis. I'd be just in GTA World or Kona World. That's where you'd find me. Where's Dave? He's in GTA World again.
God, that's sad.
Where is he today? He's in Kona World. Dave has a pattern. Yes, he does.
Yeah. Dave has a problem. Yes, he does. Yeah. Dave needs professional help. Yes, he does.
Dave doesn't want professional help.
Dave doesn't want professional help, though. No. One of the signs that you need professional help, though.
What I love about GTA was sometimes I used to have a thing in GTA 4 where I'd go a bit postal. I'd just take a gun down to the park and I'd start picking off people.
Yeah, see, that's what I do in GTA.
Yeah, I just go, let's go.
Eventually, I'm like, missions are getting boring. Let's just go and...
Yeah, let's cause some shit.
Let's just get a sniper rifle, get on the top of a roof, and just see how many people I can pick off.
I'll tell you what I was never good at, helicopters. Fuck, I was a bad pilot of helicopters.
See, I love doing that sort of stuff. The driving and the flying, that's what I used to love.
Oh, yeah. The driving's great. Yeah. And the flying in GTA 5 is good, too. We're doing the drug missions with Trevor and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, kids. If you enjoy this, come back next week for David Stew's GTA missions.
It might just be
Dave. Imagine this. I do a video streaming of just me playing GTA and we monetize it. I mean, I don't know how we'd monetize it, but that would be cool. Dave getting distracted playing golf.
Yeah, that's what I'm expecting. Like, you get 2 hours into this live stream and you're just like, oh, let's take her for a date. Where are we going? Bowling!
We're going to go bowling!
Yeah.
You get drunk.
And then you take the bowling way too seriously for a date. Yeah. You get super competitive. When she beats you, you just kill her.
Oh, yeah. You know how she can pop off in GTA, man.
Yeah.
Look, according to a tweet by writer Ryan Caddy, a new Punisher title will come out in September entitled Punisher, The Wasteland Journal. Basically, it looks to be set in the Old Man Logan universe. A backup story will debut in the Old Man Logan annual. I've actually also got, which I'm going to bring in now, some news on Old Man Logan. I want your instant reaction on this, Stu. Dead Man Logan will be a 12-part series chronicling the death of Old Man Logan. 12 parts. Like, fucking seriously?
They really do like to kill him, don't they?
But, like, what I hate about this is, like, there's almost no excitement for Old Man Logan now. They've killed a good concept. They've brought back Wolverine, but yet they haven't brought him back properly so anyone can get excited. And they've got to kill Old Man Logan because you can't have two almost exactly the same Wolverines in the same universe. 12 parts, Stu? Like, this is overkill to the max. Would you agree?
So they're running that... Hang on. You started out by saying it's... Punisher set in the Old Man Logan universe, which is a separate universe.
Apparently there's a new... Not many details, but apparently there's going to be a Punisher series. We don't know if it's a miniseries or not.
Yeah, but are they killing Old Man Logan in that universe or in the 616?
They're killing Old Man Logan in the 616 universe where he's been since Secret Wars.
Right.
And they're doing it over 12 parts, sure.
Yeah.
Because we just want to capture every fucking moment of
that's
this.
That's a cash grab.
And he's been dying, by the way, in his own title. Not just sales-wise either. So he's already dying, Stu. Like of whatever, emphysema or something. And 12 parts. It's like, you know, back in the old days, we used to have one-and-dones or maybe a two-parter. Now we've got to do a 12-parter. Yeah. On a series that's struggling, Stu, as well. Like, this isn't going to be a bestseller.
No, I don't. Just 12's a lot.
It's a lot, man.
That's a cash grab.
Like, a 12-part Batman story is a big investment. Yeah. You know, it could be awesome, but 12-part of a character that, like, it's Wolverine, almost. It's like, this sucks. Like, this is where they go so wrong these days, don't you reckon?
Yeah, you need to run that over. Do a four-parter, something like that.
Four-parter, yeah, and get a good four-parter. Hey, don't you remember when you loved the original Old Man Logan? The original fucking miniseries? How much better that was than this?
It was amazing.
Yeah,
it was great. And how long was that? Six issues?
Yeah, something like that.
This is going to run twice as long.
Twice as long.
That's so sad.
It's so much worse. Also, something that I think this is really fucking lame. Marvel have reached out to John Byrne, which I don't mind, but they want him to continue on with his X-Men run where he left off on the book back in, like, 81 or something, Stu. What do you think of this kind of thing where they're like to the creator, like, you can pick up exactly where you left off, like, 40 years ago?
To be honest, I think that's a little insulting to the fans that have read since then.
Well, they did it with Claremont. They came back and did X-Men Forever back in, like, the early 2000s, and he picked up from, like, 91. And, dude, I picked it up, and it was bad. It was boring as fuck.
See, I'm happy to have John Byrne write it again.
Sure, I would have thought...
Write it as modern...
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, when you just... When Marvel says to the fans, we're going to get our writer back, and everything you've read in the last 30 years, it didn't happen.
Doesn't matter, yeah.
I'm just like, well, fuck you. Why have I been paying for 30 years worth of comics if you're not going
to... I also think you're playing to almost empty rooms at that point. I think there's a few people out there who care that much. I think it's a very select audience.
Yeah.
I mean, also, John Byrne was the artist and a co-plotter, Stu. Claremont wrote the full scripts.
Yeah. You know?
So, I don't know. Like, it's...
Well, if you want to bring him back, but let him just have a title.
Yeah.
It's X-Men. At the moment, that's probably one of your worst sellers, so it doesn't matter if it tanks.
Yeah.
Just give him the title.
It just seems to me like... Because apparently...
Push it in an alternate universe or an alternate...
Apparently he had big problems about whatever happened to Dark Phoenix at the time. Like, him and Claremont got overruled by editorial, and I think he left off in a bit of a huff shortly afterwards. So it's kind of like he's picking up the pieces from there, doing what he wanted to do back then.
Yeah, no, I hate that.
What I also reckon is with these guys too is like they're picking up the pieces of what they wanted to do. Bullshit. I reckon half the time they're sitting there with blank page going, okay, what are we going to do now in 2018?
The other thing is it sounds like these creators haven't been reading Marvel.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, they're okay, I've got no idea what happened past 81, fill me in. And Marvel's just like, well, fuck it, you can just go back to 81.
Yeah. Go back to 81.
Yeah.
It's like Napoleon Dynamite, you know, the guy who's like, back in 84, I could throw this pig up right over those mountains. If coach had just put me in the second quarter. Like, so lost in the past, man. You know, like, the memories are just so fucking, like, back in 81, when I was good, as opposed to now where I'm this old hack burnt out completely, like...
But it sounds like either they don't value 30 years of audience participation... Which is what they're basically removing.
Yeah.
Or they're saying that the creators aren't invested enough in the story to read their back catalog.
Which I believe. I don't think John Byrne's been reading.
To read plot synopses, to kind of catch up on the basics.
Yeah, I know.
Or have someone that's up to date work with them.
Have an assistant. Like Azzarello worked with Frank Miller during the New Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Like he was a big, you know,
that makes a lot of sense.
He leant on Azzarello a lot, kind of thing.
But no, they've decided to go with.
Because a lot of these writers, like, when they leave their titles that they're synonymous with, they don't keep reading, and I can understand that. Because they've got other projects. John Byrne's been very busy.
No, I get it, but as soon as Marvel says, would you consider coming back to write X-Men?
Sure.
If it were me, I'd be like, well, it's going to take me a couple of months to get up to speed again. But yeah, I'm willing to do it if the price is right. And And at that point, Marvel goes, fine, we'll give you 2 months, you catch up. You start at X-Men this number.
Yeah, and you're in the regular continuity, which I think is more attractive anyway.
It is.
I think otherwise you're a nostalgia act.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't really think that many people are... Like, I know there's some people out there who are like, oh, John Byrne's back on X-Men, oh my God, I can't believe it. But, like, I reckon most of the audience is like, who cares?
You also got a giant chunk of the audience that have never read John Byrne's run or have never gone back that far.
True.
So they don't really care.
I mean, I don't know, man. I think some of these older acts, like Chris Claremont these days, you read his comics, I'm not exactly getting out of bed for it. Like, it was great back in the 70s, 80s, but his more modern stuff, it's not exactly cutting edge, you know?
Yeah.
Like, this is the other thing. Some acts don't age well.
No, exactly right.
Anyway, now I've got an interesting news item here. Joss Whedon says that Fox is pulling the Buffy the Vampire Slayer license from Dark Horse. Now, Stu, this comes on the back of Dark Horse losing Star Wars, Conan, now Buffy. This is the danger depending on licensed content, and I think Dark Horse are entering a very vulnerable phase in their operation.
Well, yeah, they've lost some of their biggest names. I mean,
Star Wars, Conan, and Buffy were you know, really decent sellers for them.
Yeah. This is kind of indicative of just the comic industry at the moment. They're struggling.
Sure.
Marvel and DC are struggling with the printed comic.
And maybe, let's face it, like Fox, if owned by Disney, you could see Buffy comics coming out from Marvel, just like Star Wars. As soon as Disney acquired Star Wars, Marvel started producing Star Wars comics.
You can. I'd question whether it's worth it. I think they seriously need to look at how
the Star Wars comics really sell. Apparently, they're excellent sellers in Marvel. They're top line.
Yeah, I think they need to relook at how the industry is working, because currently it's not working for them.
No,
like they're barely making that much cash off the comic arm of this.
Sure. How many people are buying Buffy comics?
That's what I'm saying. Like,
that's what I'm wondering.
And yet there's, you know, 50 titles a week that are being printed.
Sure.
How many of them are people actually wanting to go and read?
Yeah, I don't know, man. There's a lot of content out there. There's a lot of content. And we see it every week when we're picking our weeklies. And most of the stuff, I'm like, no way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm always happy to sample something. But, like, a lot of the stuff, it's like, it would be interesting, though. But apparently, you're talking about a lot of titles, Stu, selling between 5,000 to 10,000 copies. It's quite common. Quite common. Marvel will pump up their sales when they get to above 25K. In the old days, Stu, comics sold, like, regularly over 250,000 regularly, just a regular comic. You know, the industry has changed so radically. But I also question, I mean, Buffy was great, and I know there's a Buffy reboot coming, but this Buffy storyline that's been playing out the TV show for God knows how long, I mean, that must be playing to a dwindling audience.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, wow, Cheers is still going in comic book form. I'm not rushing out to buy the Cheers comic in 2018, you know what I mean? Like, the show finished in like 92. Like, you know, and seven people are buying it, and one of them is Ted Danson. It's just, I just feel like maybe it's time for Buffy to die a natural death in the comics. Apparently, Joss Whedon said they are closing it out. It is going to be the end of, so he's giving it a definitive end in the Buffy comics.
Sure.
For Dark Horse. But hilariously, Stu, he had all these big plans, and they said, well, you've got 4 issues. And he was like, okay. Because we lose the license in 4 issues, Joss, so knock yourself out, mate. And apparently his solution, Stu, was, get this, this was his solution, and tell me what you think. So what he said, what I've done is a lot of tiny panels. So I don't know if he means like he's doing like 30 panels on a page or something, like miniature size.
Yeah, he's just shrunk it down.
I was like, okay, I guess we could go that way, Joss.
I had 300 pages planned, you're giving me, what, 4 issues? So I'm just going to put all of that content just shrunk down on those pages. Yeah.
It's like, okay. And it
comes in a package deal with a magnifying glass, so you can actually read it.
And it ends in he runs out of pages, it ends in text. Finally, he just ends like one sentence. They take it and they're like, okay, Joss, that's enough. We've got enough, mate. And he just like, the end. Really, the end. This is really the end, kids. I know, I just think that. I'm sorry to be cynical, but I've always felt like I'm one of those people that thinks the Buffy the Vampire comics are just not like the show to me. They're sort of what you do when your show gets cancelled and you're just limping along in cancellation. I just don't consider them canon or anything. I know there'll be Buffy fans out there who think that's heresy, but I'm sorry to the five of you, you know. You'll always have the show. You go back and watch the DVDs.
I don't know. Look, for me, they are putting out way too many titles.
Sure.
For them to be profitable. Like, they can't all be making money.
Do you think Marvel will acquire this? Well, I think Buffy might just be allowed to die quietly.
Well, who do the rights revert to?
Well, they haven't said. The rights, they did say the rights to Firefly go to Boom now because Fox own a portion of Boom Studios, the comics. But this they don't know. But conceivably, if Disney acquire Fox as they seem to be, they will own the Buffy franchise.
Yeah, they will, because the comic and text is part of the deal.
Yeah, it's all part of the deal. Yeah, they'll own the IP. But I'm just wondering, is there really an audience for Buffy in comic form with the show? I mean, it died like over 10 years ago, Stu. the show finished, like, a long time ago, man.
Yeah, I can imagine them rebooting the show. I don't think that's far off.
They're already talking about that. There's actually, I think, active plans at Fox to reboot the show.
Yeah, I don't doubt that for a second. They're rebooting anything they can. Yeah. But their model at the moment for the comic book industry as a whole just isn't sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Would you agree with me? I think one of the best decisions, which I'm sure they can improve on, was the Walmart thing. I think they need to move back to that kind of stuff.
Oh, absolutely. They need to go back to mass distribution.
Yeah, yeah.
Drop the price, cut the number of titles, and just go for a bigger audience.
Exactly, Stu. We've said it so many times, man. Here's one thing I'll say to you. Could it then be that comic stores could still stock, like, your trades, your hardcovers kind of thing? Because part of the problem back in the old days, and even I remember this from the 80s, it was actually quite hard when you went to the newsagent to guarantee that you'd get Punisher 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. Like, it wasn't that easy. Back in those days, you couldn't be guaranteed it. Now, then you went to the comic store, and that was the wonder of the comic store, that you could be guaranteed that.
Well, the comic stores have the ability to order in specific titles.
Sure.
So if you go into your local comic book store and say, I really love the latest Deadpool, I'd want to start collecting Deadpools.
You get a standing order. Yeah.
You get a standing order, and they actually order you in that specific comic, even if they don't buy it for the store. So they don't order 10 copies and put it on the shelf.
But they know they've got one.
They will just get that one and give it to you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what the comic book store is there for.
Yeah.
But you saying, mass market it, you go newsagents, you go shopping centres, you go gas stations, you go movie theatres.
Yep.
You put them everywhere.
That's how I got into it, man. That's how I got into it.
Get them hooked, and then eventually when they can't get that one issue that sells out or gets delivered early or late or whatever happens, they then go to their comic book store.
And they go, fuck, look at this.
And they go, oh my God, there's a world of trades that I've never heard of.
Exactly.
I can get the issue that I want, and I can keep buying them through.
But they've been brought into it from the mass market appeal.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it feels like we're so close to this, though, because, like, the merchandising is everywhere. It feels like, can't publishing cotton onto this fact?
Well, another thing is, with services like Comixology, you can get a standing order on Comixology.
Yes, very easily. Yeah, digitally.
So it's the same deal. Once you get them exposed to it...
And so you work with the kids. How are the kids? Like, do they really care if it's a digital or a paper? Do they have a preference in general, the kids you teach?
No, actually, most of them will prefer digital now.
Okay, yeah.
So
I'm hip. I'm like one of the kids, really.
Yeah. Not going to go that far. But...
You're not going to call me hip. I've got a bad hip.
Yeah, you've got a hip.
It's just bad hip.
Yeah. No, they actually prefer digital, so...
Well, in that case, then they're
more likely to go through Comixology.
They get hit on Amazon or Comixology and their problems are over.
Yeah.
Exactly. Who's paying for this? Like, is it parents with a credit card or the kids have their own credit cards these days? What's going on?
I don't know. How old are the kids you're talking about?
I don't know. Like, say a 15-year-old. Does he have a credit card?
Most 15-year-olds would have, like, a debit card.
Man, I didn't have any of this shit when I was a kid. All I had was my allowance. Well, my parents gave me... They gave me maybe 15, 20 bucks. And I was like, good luck, Dave. You know what I'm saying?
I didn't even get an allowance. I had to work for my money.
I had to do chores and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, you actually got a job?
No, like, we would have to do chores for the cash.
Oh, me too, yeah.
Yeah.
We were brought up the old school way, Stu, weren't we, really?
That's it.
And if you didn't do your chores, there was no allowance.
No, there was.
There was no allowance.
Nope.
You didn't do the lawns, well, good luck.
Mate, if you didn't, there was no dinner that night.
Now, Stu, I've got a discussion point. You know I love a discussion point.
Yeah, you do love a discussion, Dave.
Okay, now, an article that got some pretty heavy discussion on the Dixonverse board, Chuck Dixon's Facebook board, was a headline that Chuck copied, you know, pasted on the board, which said, Batman's no kill rule is an outdated comic cliche that needs to end. And Chuck obviously wrote beneath it, so wrong, like his comment on the thing. Now, Stu, I firmly believe that once Batman, if he started killing random criminals, I think you ruin the intrinsic character of Batman, and he then just becomes an incredibly wealthy Punisher. I think it's as simple as that. I think the second, like, an accident, it happening and it being a story, sure. But it, like, if he's just killing, you know, Two-Face the next time he meets him and just snaps his neck, I think that is a line that really starts to ruin Batman. Where are you, Stu, on it?
Yeah, it's a terrible idea.
Yeah, and, like, you know, yeah.
And that's why we don't have a lot of long-standing Punisher villains.
No, Jigsaw's about the only one.
The vast bulk of Punisher's opponents last for that run.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, mostly.
That's why he goes and busts up drug rings and traffickers, and because you've got a distinct set of unknown villains.
And stuff
like one of them will be a boss. At the end of the six issues, he'll kill the boss, and everything goes back to semi-normal.
But I also think Batman.
Batman's rogue gallery is awesome. One of the best things about Batman. Definitely. If he is allowed to kill, how many of those guys survive the next 2 years?
I wouldn't enjoy it. If he just killed Penguin, I'd be like, this is shit.
Like, if he runs through the next 10 issues and kills off 3 of his big rogues, there'd be an absolute uproar.
Yeah, I agree. Now, I will say this. I'm far more interested in the evolution of Bruce Wayne to marry Catwoman. I thought that was actually a really interesting idea that I could have played with for a couple of years. So I'm happy to move the character around. But it feels like DC aren't happy to even do that. So I just think... And then I said to Chuck, I just think this is the worst idea of all time. And he said he believes they answered and settled this question with Nightfall, which is a really poignant answer. Like, by giving them Azrael, Azbat, who was prepared to maim and then eventually kill and just go all the way.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That was them saying, this is the Batman
that you This is that for. Reality that you've asked for.
Yeah.
This is what happens when you've we go down that broth.
Now, and I also remembered something else. I got a lot of heat last episode from you because I was talking about, when I was saying, was this the future we wished in a being? I was referring to when Dark Knight Returns came out, a lot of people, Stu, in the mainstream and comic fans and Batman fans going, Batman's got his balls back. This is Batman, how we want him, super violent. Like, and I was too. And I'm thinking, like, then for the next few years, we dug it so heavily until finally we got Nightfall, and the editorial team went, go, here it is, kids. Here's what happens. And they held up. That's what I was saying to you, was that we wished it in to be. And I forgot my point, okay? But I'm remembering now. I'm just reminding the audience that I wasn't just flailing around in the dark.
No, you were, Dave. You were definitely flailing around
in the dark. I was 3.5 hours in the podcast. You were falling asleep, and I was still punching, man. I was still throwing little punches, man.
Yeah, you were facing the wrong way and punching your own team, though. You had no idea what you were doing.
I didn't have a lot of idea.
Dave, you were so out of it last week at this point.
Anyway, so that wraps up that discussion. Stu and I both... That wraps up that discussion. We both agree, actually, firmly, that Batman just killing randoms is just a stupid idea. And whoever wrote this article just doesn't understand Batman, frankly.
I've always felt that superheroes in general shouldn't be advocates for death. I don't think that's a strong play.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't mind it in some of them, but in general, I would agree. Like, most of them aren't. Like they be most of the time, if they're doing that, they're a flat-out villain. But your Wolverine, for example, kills, and certainly has killed plenty, and it works in the character.
Yeah, you've always got to have a couple of them.
Yeah, they're like a...
Like Deadpool one. Gets away with it, Wolverine gets away with it. People like Rocket Raccoon do it all the time.
Yeah, there's a lot
You can do smaller characters that can get away with it.
But Daredevil doing it...
But in all those cases, with the exception of maybe Deadpool, they will normally try the peaceful solution first.
Oh, for sure. Punisher is an example of someone who's maxed out. In that regard. Like, he has no regard for life.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's his thing. But he's rare. Like, your Wolverine has certainly been neutered a lot over the last 20 years as well. Like, when they took away his cigars, they also took away a bit of his killing ability as well. Well, they did. Like, I do believe, like, where are you on this, Stu? Do you really think that it was a great step forward for humanity that they said Wolverine can't smoke a cigar? Do you think that was a brave move?
I agree with the move, but... From my point of view now, as a character perspective, it shouldn't have changed anything.
Yeah.
Like, the character just stopped smoking. Like, I don't think that's a big...
No, well, I just always thought it was kind of a cool character. Didn't Thing also smoke cigars? I'm sure.
Oh, a bunch of them, yeah.
And he doesn't do it anymore either. The whole Marvel thing is like...
We always used to see those scenes where you'd get all the heroes, like, meeting up and playing poker.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
Like, they'd often all have cigars out, and occasionally they do now, I think.
Yeah, okay. They're doing it again.
They'll still have a cigar when they're playing poker, like lit on the table or something, but no one's actually smoking it.
Yes, no one's actually having a hit of it.
Like, I don't think anyone's actually... You don't see anyone puffing away.
See, I'm okay with that. I think that's fine.
Oh, yeah, that doesn't faze me at all. Like, I think it's a pretty decent decision to say our heroes aren't going to smoke because it's a bad image for
smoking
kids.
Smoking is terrible.
It's there are no health benefits at all. There's no recreational benefits.
It's a bad habit. Basically.
Yeah, it's the same reason that they don't show drug use.
What's the punishment in school if you catch a kid smoking, Stu? What happens? They go to the principal?
Pretty much. Deputy principal.
I was a good kid. I know.
It's always nuanced, though. It'll depend on who the kid is. And
Oh, really? Play favourites?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm like, really?
That's not a hidden secret.
I'm okay. I'm not a teacher. I don't know this.
If a kid's a dipshit, yeah, they're going to get punished way more severely than a kid that's actually a good kid.
Fair enough, Stu.
No one has ever tried to hide that.
Yeah, okay. I was a pretty good kid. I never got caught doing too much bad.
Yeah, I doubt you did. Yeah.
Yeah, I really didn't. I was a pretty straight shooter. I like my comics.
To be honest, most kids are.
Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. Now, Stu, we've got a bit of a discussion piece. I like, you enjoy my new discussion pieces that I've got going here? Because we're light on news.
I was
going
to say, yeah, this is us going, it's a Thursday show, so we're recording a day early, and that one day...
Yeah, big deal, it's a Thursday, it's a week.
That one day has really cut back the time.
Yeah, it is. But it's an interesting thing. Eagle Moss, Legend of Batman Collection. I actually wanted to get Stu's opinion on this. Basically, this company, Eagle Moss, have a subscription service where I think it's 20 books.
60. It's 60 books.
Of Batman books?
Yes.
Okay, 60. I didn't know it was 60. Anyway, and it's like a subscription, and it covers a whole lot of Batman books, which they've just started marketing now. But, Stu, haven't you got a subscription service like this? Is this the same people?
I do have an Eagle Moss subscription.
Mm-hmm. But it's for just... Is it just DC?
It's a general DC one.
Okay, so it's not just Batman, it's everything.
It's everything included. Okay. But this separate service will have the stories that I don't have in mind.
Okay.
They never double up.
Okay.
Basically, they send out a book. For us in Australia, it's $20 for the trade, mm-hmm. which most weeks you actually work out is pretty good.
Yep.
To get a hardcover trade, it's normally around $25 to $30.
And also on this deal, if you got the deal and got the deluxe package, you got the Batman Fugitive and Murder and Fugitive over four hardcovers as well.
Yeah, they had to pay more.
Yes, yes.
And they do offer that kind of stuff all the time. Okay. But there's a couple of things that I would advise if people are looking at getting these.
Sure.
First is they are notorious for not sticking to 60 issues.
Oh, okay.
There was a Marvel one. I don't know if you can still subscribe.
Uh-huh.
It came out years and years ago.
Right.
And they advertised 60 Marvel trades. Once a fortnight, $20 a book.
Okay. And they just direct debit you and then send it? Or is it up front, or what is it?
You can direct debit. You can pay in bulk and receive them through the mail.
Gotcha.
I go through the local newsagent where I go.
Okay.
So there's plenty of ways to do it.
Sure.
But they advertise 60 books once a fortnight. And then once you get to maybe 30 or 40 books in, they go, oh, we're going to extend it to 80 because it's so popular.
Can you cut out if you want?
You can, but most people go, it's that laziness thing again.
Yeah.
Once you subscribe, most people go...
How many of these books have you got?
400 or 500.
Fuck, really?
Yeah.
So you'd be up there with my collection, wouldn't you?
Oh, easily, yeah.
That's good, man. Well, good for you.
Like, I don't mind it, but...
Yeah.
If you're thinking 60 books at $20 a pop, that's $1,200.
Sure.
I'm okay spending $1,200 on comic books, but I don't want to spend much more.
No.
I wouldn't recommend doing this.
No. And I'd also say, like...
Because that first Marvel run...
Yeah.
It's still going.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think we're up to issue 200.
And, well, I will say this. Like, I mean, I certainly buy digitally, but I've got a big trade collection I've built up over many years. So for me, see, imagine this for a kid or a teenager as a gift. Would you be like the best uncle of all time?
I mean, that's a $1,200 gift. That's a pretty...
Yeah, but stretching out over years, you know what I mean? Like...
Yeah, that's a pretty substantial gift. Put it that way.
Well, it would have to be. I can't think of any teenagers that deserve it personally, but someone might have it. Like,
I don't know. You're adding up like birthday, Christmas.
Yeah.
You're like, how many birthdays do you actually
but
have?
But it would be a great thing, like to get little Jimmy, if you want to be Father of the Year or something, like, you know, to indoctrinate him into Batman. I just think, for me,
It's also kind of cool. There are some parents I know that would get this.
Yeah.
And then the whole family would read it.
Yeah.
So they know what the kids are reading. They can talk about it.
So your
it gives them a shared experience.
Like, I've built my collection through Amazon and my Kings and stuff, through the stuff DC and Marvel put out. You built your collection through this service, an alternate way.
Basically, yeah.
Same stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a couple of upsides, a couple of downsides.
Sure.
Obviously, you've got no choice on what you're getting.
Yeah, that's a
so
thing.
Every now and again, you'll get a book and you go... Not a fan of this,
that's
but
like
you'll read
Batman it. Batman one was good though,
and quite often you'll read it and go, "This is actually a really good book. I'm glad they sent it."
Hmm.
The other thing is they'll only send you like a part one.
Yes.
So, for instance, Jason Aaron's run on Thor.
Yep.
Which I bought the whole thing digitally.
Yep.
But I got the hardcover for the first 6 issues. And that's all they're planning on sending me from Thor. The idea from these series is they give you a taste. If you like it, you buy more.
This Batman one looked pretty good.
The Batman one seems pretty comprehensive.
Mm.
I know Nightfall is included.
Yeah, but when they say that, though, are they really going to do the whole of Nightfall? Because we've got it, dude, like, and it's like massive books.
Yeah, well, each book's, what, 400 at something least, pages? 500 least, maybe?
Yeah. And how big are these books, though, that they send you?
Normally up to around 8.
Really? So they
trades? Oh, okay. 8 issues?
Okay, right. But I'm saying, like, in terms... Okay, I'm just... Anyway, the point is...
If they did Nightfall that way...
Mm. Like, how many Nightfall covers from them...
Nightfall Volume 1 would be maybe 3 parts or 4 parts.
Okay. And they were talking about doing No Man's Land. Now, dude, I've got No Man's Land here, and that's, like, 4 books that are, like, you know, about 2 inches thick each... 4 of them. So that would almost be like 4 hardcovers, wouldn't it? For these guys.
They wouldn't go that big.
No, they wouldn't go. There'd be more.
So that'd be like 8.
Okay. Well...
But, anyway, you know, they split it up. They also don't run it in order.
Sure.
That's something that you need to be aware of.
Yeah, you're jumping around.
Yeah. So if they said there's 8 issues of No Man's Land,
uh-huh.
One of them would be issue 2. One of them would be issue 100.
Really?
See, they spread them out.
Okay. So there are pluses and minuses. I just wanted to put out to readers because I just happened to come across it when I was on a website.
I mean, it's been out for maybe a month or so.
Okay. I know 2008 did do a very similar thing, basically.
There's a heap of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, Judge Dredd has one. 2008 AD has one.
Mm.
The Transformers series had one.
Okay.
There's 2 Marvels. There's 2 DCs.
It's kind of funny how it's kind of like this, because comic book stores already fulfill this function. I'm sort of like, why can't the kid just go down and buy the fucking comic? The trade. Like, what's stopping you buying Dark Knight Returns in trade? And No Man's Land in trade. But that's just me. That's what I did.
Yeah, I think this is the entry point for people that don't know where to start.
So are you going to, at 450, whatever you've got, are you going to cut off, Stu? Are you going to cut off and go your own way, or you like the subscription, you personally?
Part of it's laziness.
Sure.
And
you're a busy guy.
I don't know. Like,
a lot of women.
There have been very few books that I haven't enjoyed.
So you like sort of the feeling, I get it, you like it's a bit random and, you know.
Yeah, so like a couple of weeks ago I picked up the issue and it was Squirrel Girl.
Sure.
And it was like, I never would have picked up this title if it was...
So you're still getting a Marvel one? That's still going?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
That's what I'm saying. It's still going.
So...
Like, we are years into this collection.
Oh, I think it's cool for you, man. Like, because if you haven't read it, you haven't read it. Like, if you're okay with the cost, it feels like it's kind of like... It's a bit of a lucky dip.
It is. They're normally pretty good. Like, okay. I don't want to downsell the quality of the stories.
No, you've mentioned it
because
before.
Because they do pick good quality
you've
stories.
You've mentioned it before, and I've always thought it's interesting, and I've seen a couple of times you've got those hard covers, and I also noticed, and this is kind of lame, but the actual covers for the Batman ones cover whole aspects, like they form pictures of the spines.
Yeah, the spine art.
See, I actually think that's kind of cool.
Forms one massive image.
That was actually why I almost thought of getting it, and I was like, come on, they've literally got all these in hardcover.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm...
Yeah. So I'm not getting it personally, but I was just putting out there to maybe listeners who haven't read a lot of Batman, this could be maybe something, if they're interested in Batman, this could be an entry point. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Stu, Trader's Post this week's come up, and it's Batman the Caped Crusader Volume 1, Jim Starlin's run, Stu, which includes 10 Nights of the Beast and Death in the Family. And that's all included in the first collection. We were going to be doing it as a we're going to be doing it soon in trade.
Yeah,
we're holding back a little bit. We're going to be doing it very soon. But that's my Trader's Post selection for this week, Stu. And I know you're a Jim Starlin fan from the Cosmic Side, Stu.
Absolutely, yeah.
And he wrote one of my favorite Batman stories, The Cult. Ever read that? It's awesome.
I don't think so,
Stu. I will lend that to you. I've got the trade for that. I'll lend it to you. It's extremely good. Back in late 80s, Jim Starlin, around the time he wrote these, actually. It's an excellent, excellent Batman story.
Oh, my name, it ain't nothing. My age, it means less. The country I come from is called the Midwest. I was taught it, brought up there. belongs to a bag. But the land that I live in has God on its side. All the history books tell it, they tell it so well. The cavalry's charged, the Indians fell. The cavalry's charged, the Indians died. All the country was young, with God on its side. The Spanish American war had its day, and the Civil War too was soon laid away. And the names of the heroes I was made to memorize, with guns in their hands and God on their side. The First World War, boys, it came and it went. The reason for fighting I never did get, but I learned to accept it, accept it with pride. For you don't count the dead when God's on your side. The Second World War, boys, it came to an end. We forgave the Germans, and then we were friends. Though they might have 6 million in the ovens they fried, the Germans now too have God on their side. In the 1960s came the Vietnam War, and somebody tell me what we're fighting for. So many young men died, so many mothers cried. Now I ask the question, was God on our side? I've learned to hate Russians all through my whole life. If another war comes, it's them we must fight. To hate them and fear them, to run and to hide. You never ask questions when God's on your side. Too many dark hours I've been thinking about this, that Jesus Christ was betrayed by a kiss. But I can't think for you, you have to decide. That Judas can't have God on his side. confusion I'm feeling. Ain't no tongue can tell the words for my head. And I fall to the floor. Then if God is on our side, can't stop the next war.
Now, it's Weekly Comics, Stu. Now, this week, because it was a Thursday show, we decided, yep, and we had 12 issues of Vision to cover. We just did two comics.
Three.
Oh, we did. That's right. I didn't read it because I didn't get a chance to, but you did read it. So there's going to be one's going to be just a Stu review. But we'll kick off with Batman 53, which was the conclusion to this arc of the trial of Mr. Freeze and Bruce kind of monologuing on about God and stuff. And you found he bribed his way into the jury pool at the end.
Yeah, that was the twist that Alfred kind of dropped
in. Bit of a twist. I enjoyed, it was a lot of it was just Bruce talking about, like, the woman asked him, he said to her, are you wearing a cross? Because he could read from the folds in her shirt. And she's like, do you believe in God? And he gave a very long-winded answer about how he once did and blah, blah, blah. And then how he thought Batman was a god, which is a clear metaphor for the Bat God, which is what Grant Morrison always said he wrote.
Yeah.
Batman is kind of invincible. And he was saying how Batman, even though we view him as a god, isn't a god. He's as human as the people in the jury room. And he eventually talked them out and got a not guilty verdict for Mr. Freeze. For me, it was a nice conclusion to a quiet arc. I wouldn't describe this as my favourite Batman arc of all time, but I thought it was a nice, solid arc. I gave it 8 out of 10. I had about enough of the just in a room talking.
This wrapped up a few pieces that were kind of unclear or not used well enough in the previous two issues.
Mm-hmm.
So this was Batman atoning for that violence that he displayed.
Yeah, he beat the shit out of him.
And he's now kind of showing that recompense, and he's gone through that violent stage after the breakup, and now he's realizing that he made that mistake.
He went too far when he beat the shit out of Mr. Freeze.
Yeah, and he kind of forces himself onto this jury to make it right.
But even he said he's not sure if it's justice.
No, as far as Bruce knows, Freeze could have done it.
Yeah.
And, like, Batman's basically saying Freeze is actually probably the person that did this.
But there's enough
doubt. I'm giving enough doubt for them to get a not guilty, but I think he did it.
Yeah.
It's just that he shouldn't go down like this.
How about when he said, raise your hands if you're alive because Batman saved you, your actions.
Yeah.
Every single person, including Bruce, held their hands up.
Yeah.
I thought that was it was actually my favourite scene. Because I thought of, like, Nightfall and Cataclysm and No Man's Land. And I thought, man, Batman has saved the ass of Gotham over and over and over.
Yeah.
In big and small, you know. Could be a mugging. You know what I mean? It could be a rape.
Exactly. Could be I'm not touching like the world-ending events that he's done with.
Yeah, Contagion.
And like JLA kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
There's so many events that he saved the world.
See, where did you get this out of 10? Because I gave it an 8 out of 10. I had enough. I had just about enough of this courtroom stuff, but I did enjoy it.
I had it as a 7. It's a solid read. I enjoyed it after the wedding kind of let down.
What did you think? One thing I did like, at the end, he goes, put you back in the original costume. And he's out of that fucking rebirth costume, which I never really liked. And he's back in the original, the grey and black.
Yeah, with the big utility belt.
Yeah.
This was kind of a mini rebirth for him.
Yeah.
Where this was him kind of struggling to make right what he'd done during the breakup.
And he's struggling with the breakup, isn't he?
And he is still struggling, but this is his first signs of just moving on.
I wish he'd said, give me the blue Jim Aparo suit. I love that fucking suit. You know the 70s one, dude? With the big pointy blue ears and, like, the big yellow symbol and just that beautiful blue that he wears. Man, I wish he'd said, bring me the blue. Bring me the blue suit.
I'm happy with the black. I like the black.
Bring me Jim Aparo 1978. Is that a car, Bruce?
Very meta. Yeah.
Yeah, he just breaks the fourth wall completely.
Yeah,
just to get it exactly right.
Yeah, just to make sure the Raiders are on page. look, it was fine. It got a little too religious-y.
That was not my favourite cup of tea.
Like, I don't mind him referencing when he was just talking about Job and God in the courtroom. I was like, okay, I get the comparison. This is fine.
Mm.
And then it kind of kept going and kept going.
Yeah, a little religious, didn't
it? And then the final page is like literally a printed Bible verse. Yeah,
not a fan.
Never I was like, it. Oh, that's
to me, that's the writer putting their religion like right into the book, personally.
I just think they went too far. Like, we understood the metaphor, move on.
Yeah, it's like, do we have to grind... Like, this is the thing with comic book writers and Tom King. Do you have to grind the metaphor down and just beat it and beat it and beat it down like a fucking dead horse? Like, it's like, we got it first time, Tom King. You didn't need to include a quote at the end.
No.
You know, Jesus Christ. Like, I actually roll my eyes a little bit at that, but I'm like, that's typical comic book writing.
That last page would have been just as good, if not better, if it just didn't have that quote there.
Yeah. Was it Job's wife who turned to salt when she looked? Because I wish it would have been funny.
You're asking the wrong person.
I went to Catholic school, but I was an atheist. But I remember someone is walking away from a city, and the God says to them, because God was quite communicative with these people.
If you turn
around, you'll turn to salt. And she turned around at a certain point and turned to salt, a pillar of salt. And I feel it may have been Job. It would have been hilarious if the woman turned back to the courtroom and turned to salt, just to really drive the metaphor completely.
Just to keep going.
Yeah. We're really invested in this metaphor.
Yeah, no, I think, unfortunately, you're just asking the wrong two guys.
Yeah.
Because neither of us are religious.
I'm not at all, but I'm vaguely remembering Christian studies in grade 9, and I wasn't paying attention then.
Yeah, I never had that.
Now, then, Stu, Pearl 1, Brian... Michael Bendis. And Michael, is it Gaidos on art? The team that brought us Jessica Jones
out. Which they were very happy to tell us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's the same team as Alias. Get ready for it.
Jessica Jones reunites.
Yeah.
For Pearl.
This was the Jinx World imprint, his imprint at DC, part of his DC package. This was a huge bomb for me, Stu. I was so bored reading this story and also confused. I'm giving it 2 out of 10, and I'm not even sure where the 2 points are coming from. I actually fucking loathe this story.
I think you're generous, so I wouldn't even give him 2.
It was zero, almost. Like,
I tried to read this.
Yeah.
Gave up as soon as the first little story arc had finished.
As soon as we started, I was like, oh, I don't like this.
Because it wasn't good.
Oh, there's something about the tattoo at the start.
I tried the third time before I came here.
This is the worst Brian Bendis thing.
And I finished it, but it's just terrible.
It's really bad, isn't it?
It's not a good read.
Yeah, I'm like, Bendis, is this your best? Play your strongest hand. You come over to DC. So far, you've given us Superman barely above a snore. And then you've given us this. And this is really... I mean, I'm giving this I'm going to downgrade to... I'm giving this 0.5 out of 10. I thought this was about as bad a comic as I've read in recent memory. Like, last 20 years.
I'm just not going to rate it. It's not worth rating.
It's fucking terrible. Bendis, you've really got to lift your game, mate. This is not good.
This is bad.
And I like Brian Michael Bendis, and I don't like to be the guy saying this, but this is like a ball player who just strikes out all game long. You know? And lift your game, Bendis. Here's another fucking bombshell. The art wasn't really feeling it. In a terrible story.
Yeah, like the art was okay.
Yeah, it was very sort of impressionistic. And
and then that had those weird panels where they put in actual photos of tattoos.
It's great.
And I
Oh, it lost me at the start with all the shit about, can you believe the tattoo and the really bad dialogue, man. Wow, the dialogue was stilted. Yeah. I know Brian Michael Bendis is supposed to be this great dialogue guy, but guess what? Like, the further he got at Marvel, that's more and more time. Yeah, this was not good. This is one for the train spotter Bendis fans, isn't it? For the guys who get everything, you know what I mean? Like,
you've got to be an absolute perfectionist to kind of collect everything.
Yeah, that's it.
To even bother.
Yeah, this is where these are the guys going back who buy Nirvana's like stuff before they got the record label. You know,
for me, this is one of those. Let's just pretend these 6 issues never happened.
Yeah.
Because I doubt we're going to get to 6.
I've got a feeling Pearl may not belong for this world.
Pearl 1 will sell reasonably well because of Bendis' name.
Yeah, Bendis, you know.
I imagine Pearl 2 and 3 will not sell.
No, definitely not.
And I don't think we get 6.
Compare this dude to, like, take a reality check. Compare this to, like, Brubaker, you know, like, who does his, like, solo stuff. Or a Rucker.
Or Miller.
Yeah, exactly. Such high quality stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that's so accessible. Whereas this seemed to be determined to sort of push away. You're not a hardcore fan if you don't like this really obscure shit. Like, you can barely understand what's going on. And, yeah, this was not good. I mean, that's all we can say. Let's move on. And Stu, you've got a solo review, Cable and Deadpool Annual 1. Man, give us the flavour of this one. What was going
on? Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't find time to read this one.
Oh, Stu, I had a super busy day at work, Ben, to be honest.
Yeah, it's quite a fun little comic book.
I'm going to pick it up.
So it gets incredibly meta.
Good.
For the middle chunk of it.
Yeah.
Where Deadpool is literally walking you through how to write a comic book.
I find that funny.
Yeah, it's weird. It works.
Who did it? Was it Colin Bunn again?
I'll have to look it up.
I'm just guessing. I just know he does a lot of them, so...
Possibly. I'll have to look it up, but...
Does it reference the movie?
No, not overtly.
Okay. Thought it might have.
So it's Cable and Deadpool. Let's see. Written by David Walker.
Okay. All right. Good writer. I like David
Walker. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the basic story is... A time traveler shows up in Deadpool's place and says, you eventually become immortal and people want to kill you. So what they're going to do is they're going to send killer robots back in time to kill your mum.
Oh, no.
And Deadpool goes, oh, no, my mum. I'm going to go back in time and save her.
Yeah.
So he picks up the plunger of the time traveling plunger, which is ridiculous. And starts jumping back in time to save his mum.
Okay.
As soon as he jumps back in time, Cable shows up, whinging about the timelines being fucked up, and of course. It's Deadpool.
Yeah.
And from then on, it's just jumping from time period to time period, kind of trying to keep the mum out of danger from, at one point, dinosaurs being ridden by cowboys.
Love it.
Space pirates, mechanical octopuses, just random ass shit.
Random stuff, but good stuff. It sounds fun.
Yeah, and meanwhile...
What's the art like?
It's really good.
Oh, excellent. I'm picking it up after.
Meanwhile, Deadpool's talking you through why comics are different to movies and how the reader interprets comic books differently.
David Walker's a very good writer.
It's very meta. It's more meta than most Deadpool goes.
It sounds like my cup of tea, to be honest.
It's pretty good. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. And Stu, how could we forget the Cable Deadpool was our original comic that we...
It was, yeah.
Yeah. So, definitely, I will definitely check that out. That sounds like a rave review from Stu. Now, Stu this week brought us Trade of the Week. It was Vision by Tom King, 12 issues. Again, Stu, I read them pretty much in about two nights.
Yeah, pretty easy read, to be honest.
Pretty easy read, very much in one tone, I felt. Basically, the storyline when you...
But by design this time.
Yes, very much by design. When you pitched it last week and we're going how it's about the kid Vision and Mrs. Vision, I was like, what is Stu even fucking bringing?
I know, right?
Like, this sounded like the worst thing of all time, but I knew that everyone raves about this, so I sort of knew it must be good.
Sure.
And I actually, to be honest, it was very what I expected. A dysfunctional kind of family kind of thing, Vision at the centre, a lot of stuff about, like, how he's a robot. I found it actually pretty interesting read.
It was a very if you enjoy dark comedy, this is right up your alley.
Yes,
I loved the first issue, the narration regarding that floating vase.
Yeah,
I found that hilarious.
The floating vase, one of the gifts in the home.
Yeah, and it was empty, and the neighbors came over, and they're talking about what they were thinking as they died later.
Yeah, yeah.
And it got very dark, like...
Oh, there's a lot of darkness in this comic.
Her last thought will be, why was the vase empty?
Mm.
And that really bugged her until the day she died, which was next week.
Which is next week.
And it's really fun kind of dark humor.
Yeah, this is something... It's almost like many a TV show that deals with, like, the darker side of suburbia or something like that.
Yeah, and it's heavily, heavily influenced by Shakespearean drama.
Oh, yeah, they're quoting Merchant of Venice constantly.
Constantly, and that's where the title of the books came from.
Yeah, okay.
So that's all Shakespeare, and it's very much a tragic comedy in the vein of Shakespeare.
And it has ties to the... which I didn't realise it would have. I thought it might have been completely enclosed, but it does have ties to the wider Marvel Universe at the end.
Although it does take around six issues to get there.
Yes, yes.
It's a very enclosed story for the first book.
Yep, and then you have a guest issue, which is all about Scarlet Witch and him.
Yep.
Which was needed, I think, because I thought he was with Scarlet Witch. I thought she was his wife.
No, not for a while. Yeah,
I knew they'd been together. And that was interesting because she seemed to be the only one who seemed to get him that wasn't a Vision.
Agatha Harkness kind of understood roughly where he was going.
Yeah.
She would drop in every now and again, she was a really nice cameo.
That was her storyline, I thought, was actually... You only got a little bit of about how she was a witch, but that was interesting and how it tied into the end.
Yeah.
I will say this. I thought this was very, very well written. Like, this struck me as a very well-written piece. It was all in kind of one gear. I read it fast. I enjoyed it. I'd had enough of it by the end. Yeah. I thought it wrapped up nicely. I thought he timed it almost perfectly. I thought, I can see why it got the plaudits, frankly. I gave it 8.5. He got Batman out of this. DC got Batman revision. It really is good. And it's also good to see someone... I mean, neither of us really care about Vision.
No, he's not a fan favourite at all.
But Vision does have some interesting stuff, which is exploited in this. And the narration, which can be annoying in Batman, was very good here.
But it works here because it's very mechanical and monotonous.
Yes, and how about how he kept saying, Vision saved the world 37 times, and it would go Ultron again, Ultron again. Like, I thought that was some brilliant stuff, actually. Yeah. I, to be honest, I really got a real thrill out of reading this as I was reading it. And I kept thinking to myself, I don't care about Vision, but I actually love this storyline. And this is actually giving me some insight into Vision.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interestingly. I wish more like this, actually.
It felt actually a lot like a Hitchcock movie.
Yes, very atmospheric.
Where there's kind of this, from the outside looking in, it's this boring 9-to-5 working family.
Yeah.
Who has like a tie-in suit, goes to work, comes home, has dinner with a family.
Trying so desperately to be normal.
Like the most boring, normal family you can imagine.
Yeah.
Yet behind closed doors, one's crushing on a boy who her mother shot in the face. The son is losing his mind, repeating Shakespeare ad nausea.
The daughters, she had problems of her own. She got attacked at a certain point by that other guy.
Yeah, they were like severely bullied at school because they were so different. The mum literally killed a supervillain, hit it up, got blackmailed.
Yeah.
Went to the neighbor's house to kill the neighbor to end the blackmail cycle.
Mrs. Vision was pretty messed up, wasn't she?
I think they all kind of were. They strove for normal.
Yeah.
But they didn't have that human emotion there.
When she told the story at the end, I'm sorry, readers, for jumping around so much, but when she told the story at the end saying how she kept manipulating Vision, I was like, oh, okay, that's the get-out-of-jail-free card, Vision. Then I was like, oh, that was a lie, and Vision's buying into that lie. I was like, Vision's actually quite complicit here.
Well, that's the... their story constantly, and they reference this like an issue one, where the police would come over and say... Have you got any way to corroborate your story? Like, do you have any...
Yeah.
Who are you with? Can I get any kind of witnesses?
Like, I can corroborate it.
And Vision was saying, well, I can corroborate my own story. I can give you my memories.
But Vision, the end, though...
And then the whole way through... No, the Vision never lied. The wife was manipulating his memories.
Oh, I thought at the end of what he wasn't. I thought at the end it was revealed that she didn't do that. That was just her story.
No, he was aware she was manipulating his mind.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see.
Like, he knew that she was doing it, but he also knew that he would never have to tell a lie.
I see. So he let it happen.
And he basically let it happen.
At the end, was it her that he was working on?
It's like his wife version 2.
Okay. Also, did that couple die?
Yes.
When? I must have missed that, because I was like, when did they actually die? It was saying later...
It was around issue 8.
Oh, okay. That may have been why I missed it. Okay.
Where the beam shot out and the house exploded.
Ah, okay. Yeah, gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I know exactly. Because I was looking for that and thought, surely that wasn't missed.
No, they reference it in book 1. It happened in book 2.
Yeah, I love it when stuff does like that. Like, Sandman used to do that kind of thing. Yeah. They foreshadow it, and don't just foreshadow, they tell you something will happen.
Yeah, exactly right. And this was... That first issue really...
That's a really good story. It's like really in many a short story.
Yeah.
This was actually... To be honest, Tom King is such a frustrating writer. He's so good, and yet I feel he plays in a fairly confined space a lot of the time.
He's certainly got a comfort zone that he doesn't particularly like to stray from.
That's exactly it.
And I think...
Works well here, though.
It works really well with this character.
Yeah.
I don't know if it works as well with Batman.
Oh, I think it doesn't. I think he writes some remarkable Batman, and then he writes some really ordinary choices. I think he struggles with sometimes conveying what's happening and wrapping storylines up.
Yeah, whereas with Vision, you never need to worry, because they can robotically tell you what's happened.
Yeah. But and like, when they're thinking like a robot at the end. But
yeah, like when the police came in and Vision was saying, well, at 7:23, I arrived home. And you're like, so you can get away with that in this comic.
Yeah, no.
When Batman does it, it's not compelling.
No. The strength of Tom King were on display. I liked the storyline of Victor, who was like a junior Vision or something.
Victor was made by Ultron.
Right.
So they kind of consider him Vision's brother.
Yes. And he struggled with many of the same... Like, at first you're like, oh, he's got it all going on. Unlike the Vision guys who are all...
But they tell you from day one that he was programmed to destroy the Avengers.
Yeah.
And he knows that once he becomes a hero, his programming will flip and become a villain.
Yeah, and he's obsessed with dying without doing that.
He's obsessed with trying to change that destiny.
Yes.
And in doing so, becomes the villain he feared.
I liked the scene. Because you know how at the beginning... He does.
Which, again, by the way, is very Shakespearean.
Yes.
Like, trying to get away from your fate...
Yeah, trying to avert your...
...only causes it to happen.
Oh, totally. That's the storyline of so many Shakespeare plays.
Yeah.
What I liked with his little arc was when he was introduced at first and he's taking little excursions, he seemed very together, whereas they're not. And then you got a beautiful snapshot of his life, which has been just misery. And, like, everything had failed, and he was literally... He'd been in the Avengers Over, they'd wrapped that, and he was just sitting at home, literally just in his, like, ramshackle house, just sitting in a chair until the Avengers came and said, there's a way back in, you've got to infiltrate the Vision household. He's like, oh, it really is quite sad. Like, he's doomed.
Yeah.
And I thought that was great. You're right, there was Shakespeare kind of elements running through this.
But that kind of mimics what we see from the Vision when we start.
Mm.
We see a very normal family living a very boring life. The first issue is them giving the neighbours a tour of the house.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a mundane issue.
How they can't sleep? And so they just...
Yeah, they just lie there.
They just lie there.
And it's like, it's just a little bit creepy.
Vision was creeping me out. Like, after this, I was like, I don't trust Vision. Like, I've never liked him, now I don't trust him.
And see, I think that's the point. That's...
Like, do you trust Vision, Stu? Like, really? I don't. I started to be like, I've always been a bit suspicious, but I suddenly was like, hey, actually, good point, Tom King. We really shouldn't trust Vision. Maybe kick him out of the Avengers. he's shit already in the movies. Like, I don't know, like, this was interesting, and it wasn't just a good writer doing a good take on a shit character. I thought he made Vision seem interesting as well. You know?
Yeah, even if only for a moment.
Yeah, even if only for a moment. Like, but it was the only time in my life I can ever remember...
Same.
...actually caring about Vision.
Yeah,
and
same.
Being very invested, and I got to the end of the storyline, and it was enough for me, by the way.
Yeah, I could have maybe done with 10 issues instead of 12.
Sure.
Cut it slightly shorter.
I did like the side story with Scarlet Witch, where you got an insight into it, because I actually think that's interesting. She's such a mess. She's a hot mess.
Yeah.
He's his own freak. And incidents is going, how about through the years where we had the white Vision, the all white one, who just goes, these kids aren't real, then I'm not your father.
Yeah.
I'm a completely different program.
Yeah.
And she's just like, she says, why do you have to be so cruel? And he says, can the truth be cruel? Or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, actually it can. The truth can sometimes be the cruelest thing of all.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you strip away lies and stuff, with the truth is the truth. But that was interesting. And I got an insight, and then I was like, man, Vision is just an A-grade asshole, but actually it's just his but it's just his programming.
Yeah, he's... I mean, his brainwaves were taken from Wonder Man.
Yeah.
From Simon Williams, so...
Another character I couldn't give a fuck about.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a character Drew DeRacy loves. A big 70s guy. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I liked that in this Wonder... gave him a copy of her brain patterns.
Mm.
And said, you know, if you want to build a wife...
Oh, okay, yeah.
You can use my brain.
And was that Mrs. Vision?
Yeah.
Okay, but Mrs. Vision was nuts. What went wrong with Mrs. Vision? Why was she so nutty?
It was one of those slippery slopes where... she didn't mean to kill... Was it Spectre that came...
Grim Reaper.
Grim Reaper. So, Wonder Man's brother...
Yeah.
Never liked the idea that Vision and Scarlet Witch were together.
Yeah.
Because he always thought it should have been his brother in Scarlet Witch.
Which it was at one point in the flashbacks.
Yeah. So he's basically always had it out for Vision.
Right.
So he came around trying to kill Vision, and Vision's wife accidentally killed him.
Yeah.
It was in a fight. He'd hurt the daughter, and she kind of lost it and killed
him. Oh, he seriously hurt the daughter, yeah.
Yeah. And then she just started covering it up and kind of... It just got deeper and deeper in these lies. It just kind of spiraled out of control.
Yeah, it really was a domestic tragedy, wasn't it?
Yeah.
No, it was an interesting book. I mean, I almost don't know what else there is to say about it. It's 12 issues that go by. It's the same artist on every issue but the Scarlet Witch issue. That was a separate artist, although that was still very much in the same style. Again, it was 12 issues that were an easy read, a very pleasant read. I read them in two nights. And I was compulsive. I read them all on Marvel Unlimited again. But that Marvel Unlimited for me is becoming a bigger factor every single week. It's great. Yeah, I mean, I'd give this an 8.5 out of 10. Sure.
So did I. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
No, I recommend it. And definitely I think there's a lot of listeners out there that, like, this has a lot of hype on it. I'll tell you what also this says, too. I really believe it says something about the rest of the comic market and the mainstream publishers. Like, there should be more comics of this quality, because this wasn't so good that it can't be matched, you know?
No, and the other thing was it was a B-grade character.
Definitely, yeah.
Like, yeah. You can write these stories that are this good on pretty much any character.
That's exactly it, man. I really feel like we need to be a bit more ambitious as comic... and a bit more hungry as comic book readers and demand a bit more quality. Yeah. Like, this kind of quality... this wasn't like, oh, no one can ever repeat this.
No, and it wasn't even an original story.
No.
Like we've been saying, it was taken directly from, like, between Hitchcock movies and Shakespeare plays.
Yeah.
You can write out this entire book.
Yeah, exactly.
You change the technology around, and that's exactly what you've got.
I'm surprised there's not more books like this, because, like, there's so many characters that are in supposedly group books that you can manufacture great storylines out of. It's like Fraction did this with Hawkeye. He took Hawkeye out of the Avengers and created a really compelling narrative.
Yeah.
But he just picked someone. You know what I mean? He just picked like a random, oh, I'll pick Hawkeye.
I mean, I think part of the problem is it doesn't get the recognition because people aren't reading comics in general. And well, because Marvel's putting out so many titles that it gets buried.
Getting swamped, yeah. But there's still a readership out there. Like, I mean, definitely people were talking about this Vision book. This went
above
the noise, you know.
But let's say we get a weekly reading list and we look through the, let's say, 30 Marvel comics that come out this week.
Yeah.
If you see Vision number one, you and I are both more than likely just skipping that one.
Oh, yeah. If I hadn't heard the hype on Vision...
like, it doesn't make that reading list.
I know.
Yet once we get to issue 4 and 5 and people are saying, read it, it's amazing, then kind of you go back.
And I imagine this did very well in trade. Because I imagine so. Another book I want to read from Tom King is a DC book called Omega Men, which apparently is awesome. He wrote this at the same time as Vision. In the letters page, he mentions Omega Men got cancelled, and then it got brought back by the fans. And that, along with Vision, is where his reputation just blew up.
Yeah.
I mean, because other than that, he'd done Sheriff of Babylon, you know, which was his book, and then his comic. If you're a Tom King Batman fan, read this, because...
very similar style, but I think it fits the character of a lot better.
A lot better. And it's a nice enclosed piece. I mean, I think this would be well worth many a bookshelf, basically.
Yeah.
It's one of those ones that I think would be worthwhile there. Now, Stu, do we have much more to say about that one? Because what are we doing next week? I've already forgotten. Oh, we're doing Superman Panic in the Sky.
Yeah, we've got Superman Panic in the Sky next week.
And I've got a competition to announce, too.
This will be good.
So, next week, Superman Panic in the Sky. It's a Dave pick.
Yep.
Then we have one more week, and then I'm away in Hawaii.
Do we have that one more week?
Yeah, we do. I checked before the show, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so what I'm going to say is I want listeners to suggest a book for Hawaii, because I'm going to do one calling to Stu to discuss a book. Other than that, Stu's been given the keys to the kingdom, and he's got, like, don't worry, Stu's got his little buddy set up, his little network set up, you know, anime. Hopefully Greg gets a run. I hope Greg gets a run.
Well, you're going to have to call him and convince him. Because he's on the fence at the moment.
I'll text.
Yeah.
Well, with you guys, does it come down to cash? I mean, Greg, there's $3 in it for you.
And you, hey, where's my $20? This is I'm on back pay.
You can take
75 issues.
You can take a brother fee. Yeah, take a fee out of the 20.
I'll take the $20 for back pay now. Thank you.
Anyway,
75 issues.
But like, what I want is like people can suggest book. Now, firstly, I'm not going to just I'm bothering to do something on my holiday, so don't suggest anything shit. Because I won't do it. But yeah, Adam the Computer Crouch was going to come with some suggestions. So we've got a couple of weeks here. So next week we've got a normal show. We're doing Superman Panic in the Sky. The week after that will be a normal show, and then it'll be Stew for I don't know how many weeks. About 3 weeks.
I think it's about three.
It's about three. Yeah, because I'm in Hawaii for about that long with my lovely girlfriend, and I'll be drinking a lot of alcohol and just swimming around, Stew, like a little fish, mermaid.
So the review the phone-in review might be interesting.
Oh yeah, it's just yeah, it's gonna be pretty loose.
Yeah, but it's gonna be very
loose. Daddy will need something to read on the plane and that kind of thing, like you know. So, I'll have to give them some clues of stuff I like. I like give me something.
I imagine at this point they kind of understand what you like.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Good.
Anything with gratuitous violence or sex scenes?
Oh, hello.
I think Dave's. Dave's all aboard.
I'm woken up.
Yeah. Anything that people would look at weird on a plane, I think Dave's all up for that.
Hey, Michelle's seen it all, and she's going to be beside me on the plane, so you know, nothing's going to shock her. She's looked a couple of times, I've said before, she's looked a couple of times at the comics, and she's gone, what are you reading? And how are you reading that before
me? Yeah.
She's like, what is going...
What we want is the stewardess to have that reaction. That's... what the fuck is wrong with you? That's,
a lot. There's a lot going on here.
That's the kind of stuff Dave enjoys.
So this was a Thursday night, Stu. Did you like a Thursday night? This was a bit of a change of pace for us.
It was.
Yeah. I mean, it's a work day tomorrow.
We're forced into it, but...
We're forced into it. We needs must. We can rise above.
We can.
Please like us on Facebook. iTunes reviews are super appreciated. The collective is going strong. By the way, shout out to Ray. Obviously, he's got Into the Night going strong with Connor, but he's just starting a Superman podcast with another Connor who runs an Iron Fist podcast, also a member of the collective. And they're starting a Superman podcast, which is happening soon. So we'll mention
that's in his rider, is it? I must have a Connor on the team.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And there's already been a bit of confusion, people getting confused by the Connors. But, I mean, you know, like Connor McLeod? That was Connor McLeod, wasn't it? In Highlander? I think it was Connor. I can't remember.
No idea what the fuck that's on about anymore.
But anyway, where was my invitation? I mean, this is the thing. Like, Ray was obviously being.
I'm pretty sure Ray's heard the signal of doom. I mean, that's
Ray loves the signal, man. But I mean, I'm waiting at home for the call. I thought, you know, there's a Big Bad podcast.
Hang on, Dave. How much time do you have on your hands?
Not that much. But like, I like to be invited. You know what I'm saying? I like to be needed. But regardless. Please check out the collective as well. It's a really great bunch now. We've got a lot of people. They're really helping out a lot, Stu, with a lot of the retweets and likes and stuff and really building the listener base amongst the whole collective. And I do it too. So on my Twitter feed, for example, I always, you know, retweet and like a lot of the collective stuff. And people seem to dig it. So it's really been a good sort of initiative that's been spearheaded by Ray and the other guys. And I've kind of hopped on board and, I add my pieces in. And like, I'm on this new fucking thing, man, Discord. You ever heard of this? It's a new... Yeah, so she doesn't even know what it is. Well, I'm incredible.
I know what the word Discord is, but what...
Discord is like a phone app. And I'm on the Batman Universe Discord thing. And now I'm on the Looney Bin thing. And neither of them do I ever contribute to it all.
Yeah.
But I've got like... But like, the thing is, they're on Discord, but they're also on Facebook. So I've got like multiple conversations going on at once. So my solution is just stay very generic. Stay on brand. You know? So Dave turns up.
Yeah.
Does his spiel. Clocks out. I don't know what else they expect. Three different platforms, same message.
You get the authentic Dave. Yeah.
Listen to Signal. And the other night on Looney Bin, someone mentioned something that pissed me off about like modern comics, and I just went on a rant. And people were just like,
yeah.
You can hear people just like setting down and heading out for a cup of tea, getting dinner.
Yeah.
Just let the guy punch himself out.
He'll tire himself out eventually. Yeah. It's like a toddler having a tantrum.
That's what it was. Yeah. I wasn't saying anything new that I haven't said before. I wasn't even saying that. I've said it a million times on Signal, stuff. Yeah.
Eventually he'll get bored and go away.
That's what happened, man. Yeah. I think a butterfly went across the room and I just went away.
It's like chasing that. Yeah.
Anyway, that's enough Signal for tonight. We will catch you next week. It's going to be another Thursday show. Stu. So bring your weekend or weekday kind of intensity next week as well. And this will be coming up a week earlier too in the feeds. So good night. Over.
Early one morning the sun was shining. She was lying in bed, wondering if she changed it all. If her hair was still red. If folks, they set their lives together, shoes are gonna be rough. They never did like mama's homemade dress. Papa's bank book wasn't big enough. And he was standing on the side of the road, rain falling on his shoes. Heading out for the East Coast, Lord knows he paid some dues. Getting through, tangled up in blue. She was mad when they first met, soon to be divorced. He helped her out of a jam, I guess, but he used a little too much force. And he drove that car as far as they could, abandoned it out west. Splitting up on a dark set night, both agreeing on it was best. And she turned around to look at him as he was walking away, saying over her shoulder, we'll meet again someday on the avenue, tangled up in blue. He had a job in Santa Fe, working in an old hotel, but he never did like it all that much. And one day it just went to hell. So he drifted down to New Orleans, lucky not to be destroyed, where he got him a job on a fishing boat docked outside Delacroix. But all the while he was alone, the past was close behind. He'd seen a lot of women, but she never escaped his mind. And he just grew tangled up in blue. She was working in a topless place, and I stopped in for a beer. I just kept looking at the side of her face, and the spotlight's so clear. And later on, when the girl thinned out, I was just about to do the same. She was standing there right beside my chair, said, don't tell me, let me guess your name. I muttered something underneath my breath. She studied the lines of my face. Must admit, felt a little uneasy when she bent down to tie the laces of my shoes, tangled up in blue. I lived with them on Montague Street in a basement down the stairs. There was music in the cafes at night and revolution in the air. Well, he started into dealing with slaves and something inside of him died. She had to sell everything she owned and froze up inside. And when it all came crashing down, I became withdrawn. The only thing I knew how to do was keep on keeping on like a bird that flew, tangled up in blue. So now I'm going on back again, I got to get to them somehow. All the faces we used to know, they're an illusion to me now. Some are mathematicians, some are truck drivers' wives. Don't know how it all got started, I don't know what they're doing with their lives. But me, I'm still on the road, heading for another joint. We always did feel the same, we just saw it from a different point of view, tangled up in blue.